From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
On the outside, affirmed on the rail, it's Coastal between those two, spectacular bid. Those three now across the track, approaching the eighth pole. Affirmed once again draws clear by a length. On the inside, it's spectacular bid in second. Coastal is dropping back in third, past the 16th pole. Affirmed on the outside, takes this race. Horse of the year, affirmed in front.
And Curlin has taken the lead. It is Curlin now in front. Wandering Boy fights on. He's a half length behind in second. And then farther back, it's Merchant Marine third. And here he is, Curlin, under the wire, beyond Cigar, and into the records books.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
One furlong to go. Stay thirsty. Stay thirsty still there. But here comes Flat Out on the outside. And Stay Thirsty, who's hanging on bravely. Stay Thirsty down inside. And Flat Out, who comes with the last gasp lunge to win. Flat Out got it by a flared nostril.
They still have to catch Diversify, who's put to the whip. Diversify holding on to the lead. Keen Ice on the outside and Pavel trying to run him down. Diversify digs in. Keen Ice on the outside and Pavel can't get him. Diversify has won the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And am I the only one who thinks it feels strange to say Happy Jockey Club Gold Cup Day on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend? I didn't like when the Woodward was moved from Belmont to Saratoga back in 2006, but I guess you kind of get used to it. And I really dislike this move even more. The Woodward, by the way, shifts back to Belmont this fall. But the Gold Cup hasn't always been run at Belmont. So I guess there's precedent for moving the race from Elmont upstate to Saratoga. The race was held at Aqueduct from 1958 to 1961, from 1963 to 67, and again from 69 to 74. But as somebody who was born in 1971, the Jockey Club Gold Cup has been synonymous with the Belmont fall meet. So yeah, it feels a little strange to be talking about the Gold Cup in early September at Saratoga. But regardless, the race will indeed be run later today, and the winner is going to punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Classic, the 43rd running of the Grade 1 Flower Bowl, also a customary feature of the Belmont Fall Meet, joins the Gold Cup on today's card, and we'll see the winner of that race earn a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. And just in case you're wondering, let's get this out of the way right off the bat. 64 days, 7 hours. No, check that. Looked at it wrong. We are 62 days, 5 hours, and 46 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup in November. That's 5th and 6th. We'll be there as your official radio home. Very proud to say for the 15th consecutive year here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is right here with us. Going to talk with Fox Sports' and NYRA's Acacia Courtney coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. She'll talk about that 12-race program at Saratoga. She'll walk through the greatest stakes races, including the Flower Bowl and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. 9:40, going to welcome in Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher as he gets set to saddle the defending champion Happy Saver, who is attempting to become the 11th horse to win back-to-back runnings of the Jockey Club Gold Cup. If he does it, how about this company? He's going to join Hall of Famers Nashua, Shuvi, Slew of Gold, Skip Away, and Curlin. Of course, the most recent horse to win back-to-back runnings of the Gold Cup was Tonalist in 2014 and 2015. Todd is also going to spend time looking back on Malathot's big win in the Alabama a couple of weeks ago. And again, that comes your way at 9:40, so make sure you're locked in for that one. I will also go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with NBC announcer Larry Colmus, the voice of the Breeders' Cup and, of course, the Triple Crown. That's in the final segment of today's show at 10:40 Eastern Time. Larry is also going to be calling the Kentucky Downs meet, which starts tomorrow. So we'll spend some time talking about that meet and looking ahead. And going to get Larry's thoughts on what it's like to call at Kentucky Downs, where it's a much different type of racetrack configuration. Very European style. It kind of goes up and down, and it's a big, wide turn, and a little bit different, well, much different from most places that Larry has called. But he's called at Kentucky Downs before, so I'll talk to him about that and some of the challenges that that presents, especially with some of the big fields, because the money at Kentucky Downs is unbelievable. So you're going to have everybody and their brother pointing their horses and their sister pointing their horses to that Kentucky Downs meet. It's going to be fantastic. Poll question today. This is presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Who wins today's Jockey Club Gold Cup? And I'm going to give you some choices today. Only a six-horse field. But you can pick Happy Saver, the defending champ. You can pick Max Player, the horse that beat Happy Saver earlier in the meet. Forza D'Oro will be the third choice, and then the fourth one, Other. And if you do click Other, please specify one of the other three you think can win today's Jockey Club Gold Cup. So who wins today's Jockey Club Gold Cup? Happy Saver, Max Player, Forza D'Oro, or Other. And you can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, HRRN on Twitter is where you can cast your vote. And if you don't do the social media thing, just email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, here's the full lineup for today's show. Barry Pearl from Jockeys and Jeans joins me in our first segment coming up at 8:15. He's going to give you the latest on their fundraiser to benefit PDJF, which takes place next Saturday at Monmouth Park. Chauncey Morris, the executive director of the KTA-KTOB, is going to be here at 8:35 to discuss the tremendous impact those organizations have had on the Kentucky Downs meet and racing here in the Bluegrass State. Acacia Courtney at 9 o'clock. At 9:20, it's time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. And I will welcome in Brad Cox exercise rider Katie Tolbert, who has a wonderful background. She is also partners in the morning with Champion Essential Qualities, who just won the Travers last Saturday. So I'll get a chance to get Katie's thoughts on the big horse, the champ. And we'll talk about her background, too. She is a true unsung hero in our sport. Todd Pletcher at 9:40, and then hour three begins at 10 o'clock Eastern as Sean Clancy brings you his weekly in-the-room conversation, one-on-one, jockey-to-jockey conversation, always entertaining. Looking forward to that at 10 Eastern. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:40, I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with NBC announcer Larry Colmus. That is all ahead, but it begins with Barry Pearl from Jockeys and Jeans when I come back. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they come for the quarter pole, and Tacitus will turn for home with the lead. Mystic Guide on the outside, Happy Saver down at the rail. So it's three of them across the track, and here is Mystic Guide on the outside to poke ahead in front. Happy Saver's now coming on. It's going to be between the 2 3-year-olds. Happy Saver at the rail, Mystic Guide on the outside. Happy Saver is in front, and Happy Saver stays undefeated. He steps up, and he wins the Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. And that was John Embriel with the call of the Jockey Club Gold Cup last year at Belmont Park. Happy Saver remaining undefeated with that victory. He is back in action later today to defend his title, but the Jockey Club Gold Cup moving from Belmont to Saratoga. He looks for redemption after being beaten earlier in the meet. He'll get a rematch with Max Player, and I'm going to talk with trainer Todd Pletcher, the Hall of Famer, who will saddle Happy Saver. He joins me right around 9:40 Eastern time this morning. But next Saturday, I thought this was appropriate to do now. We're going to look ahead to next Saturday and Monmouth Park in Oceanport, New Jersey, where Jockeys in Jeans will be holding a benefit for the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And to tell you more about that, I welcome in Barry Pearl. And Barry, this is going to be fantastic. You have done yeoman's work. You and the team at Jockeys in Jeans have done yeoman's work to benefit PDJF over the years. And this is shaping up to be just one heck of an event next Saturday.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me on. I certainly appreciate it, and we all do. And we couldn't be happier about being in Monmouth Park. You know, after we were canceled last year, and rightly so, at Churchill because of the COVID. And we were already scheduled to come to Monmouth and met with them, and they were ready to go. So it looks like if we get about a little bit lucky, we could break our record. So this could be pretty good.
Yeah, Jockeys in Jeans was founded in 2014. And again, Barry, I'll let you talk more about that in a second here. But I want to brag on you for a minute. You have raised more than $1.6 million to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And I think that that qualifies as being an industry star of the week. And this segment, this interview, brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. Stuart sponsors an Industry Star of the Week interview on the program every single Saturday morning, and I couldn't think of anybody more deserving than you and the team at Jockeys in Jeans. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it. We call it a labor of love. You know, I mean, all of the founding members, there's still three of us here that are founding members. Of course, we added more people, you know, to help. But and our goal was always to be able to help our fallen riders and what we call our fallen riders. And we're very fortunate we've been able to do that through the help of a lot of people, not only the tracks and the Horsemen's Association and sponsors, but also with folks like yourself who get the word out. And that means a lot to us and to make these things successful. So, yeah, we're real happy. It looks, as I said, it looks like we're going to get close to breaking our Canterbury Park record, which was 300,000 for a day. With a little luck, we're going to do that. And we're just absolutely thrilled. We have Right now we have 12, maybe 14 Hall of Famers coming in. There's two that if they're not riding on Saturday, they probably will be with us, which is a pretty nice group of folks. And we have seven of what we call our fallen riders. Those are, you know, our folks who are now riding wheelchairs instead of horses.
Yeah, it's always sad, but it's always inspirational, too, when those folks are in attendance and fans will get an opportunity to talk with the jockeys and to get to mix and mingle with them a little bit, I would assume. Can they do that this year?
Oh, yeah, no, that's what it's all about. The folks that come to our event, we have a number of things that are going on. We have a live auction where we sell our premium items, such as our Hall of Fame poster with I think right now we're up to almost every living Hall of Famer on there that signed that thing. And our Kentucky Derby poster, that is almost the same. And those are kind of premium items. Then we have two silent auctions. We have one in the actual event area, and we have one for the fans down in the grandstand, so nobody gets left out on that. And we'll have a big autograph session in the grandstand for the fans who can't come upstairs, you know, because they, for whatever reason. But they will have the opportunity to say hello and get items autographed by our Hall of Famers and our fallen riders.
I think that's great that folks don't necessarily have to be on site at Monmouth next Saturday if they want to help support the PDJF and support jockeys and jeans. You mentioned the other auction. Now, I assume that they can go online and they can participate that way too?
Yeah, we're starting that this year. We're doing something completely different. We're doing a proxy bid. And so we built a web page for that. It's at jockeysandjeans.com. And just go, you'll see it's on their auction. And what you do is you see all the items. If you click on any of the items that we have there, a description comes up. And you fill out the form. There's a form right on the website. And you decide what you want to bid on that. And we have the forms there, and we'll have somebody be bidding for you up to whatever your maximum amount is. It's we're hoping it really works well, and that's going to give us a whole new outlook on the auctions.
Okay, so for fans, Barry, that are going to be at Monmouth next Saturday, maybe they're making a special trip because of this event, lay it out for me. How does it all work? Do they have to sign up? Do they just show up at the door? Walk me through it.
Well, there's two ways. The best way to do it, because we will have, you know, we believe this thing's going to sell out, is to just to go to Monmouth Park. MonmouthPark.com, and you'll see it, Jockeys and Jeans. You can buy your tickets right there. Then we get notification of that being purchased. Then we put you on the list. There you are. And when you come out to Monmouth Park, you'll have a little slip of paper from that website. And we'll have a beautiful luncheon, courtesy of Monmouth Park. We'll have our auction. We'll have a Hall of Famers. We'll have We're doing this year a really, really neat multimedia slideshow that kind of goes over a number of things, and that's going to be what I feel, at least, a real, real neat thing. And so it's just a great day for the fan to be able to meet. I mean, how many times can you be in the same room with 14 Hall of Famers? You know what I mean? That's just a big deal.
Yeah, it really is. Can you give me a sneak peek as to some of those Hall of Famers that are going to be there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have them all here. Wait a minute, tell you. I have all this written down. So if not, I start to lose it. But we have Luffy Pinkai coming in.
Wow.
Pat Day. Chris McCarron. I got to tell you a story about Chris and Pat. This is the God's honest truth. Chris calls me up and says, can't come. I got a freebie trip out to Hawaii to play golf. They're paying my way, all this stuff. I say, well, okay, I understand that. It's cool. And then Pat calls me. Next day says, my 50th class reunion. I got to go to that. Well, don't you know that 3 days later they both call me and said, no, we're not good doing that. We're coming to Jockeys and Jeans. So
awesome.
Right there, you got to say, oh, my goodness. Sandy Hawley will be there, of course. Sandy's our Hall of Fame coordinator. Ramon Dominguez. We're hoping that Javier Castellano will get down from New York. Bill Bowen. Billy Bowen,
wow.
Driving up from Florida to come to Jockeys and Jeans.
Wow.
Okay. Julie Crone, Vasquez, Braulio Baeza, Jose Santos, Jordi Velasquez, one of my oldest and dearest friends. And maybe Johnny Velasquez might be there, too, because it depends on what's going on that Saturday. Early fires and something we've never done before, but we thought he deserved it. G.R. Carter. I don't know if you know who G.R. Carter is.
Yeah, of course. Quarter horse man.
The greatest quarter horse riders ever sit a horse.
Yeah.
And he's on our committee, and so we're going to honor him, too, because, here's a guy – won 10 straight quarter horse championship titles in a year over the course of 10 years. That's amazing. Then we're going to have some ambassadors that are going to be there. Tony Black. Everybody knows Tony. Arnie Ilescu from Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Armando Rivera, who is one of our fallen riders. Brian Elmore from up in Indiana.
Okay.
And he's going to be there, too. So we got a pretty star-studded group of folks going to be there this year, and it's really pretty neat.
Yeah, I would say so. It sounds like retirement's treating Chris McCarron pretty good, because I reached out to him last week to see if he could join me on this program, and the one time I had open was the one time he couldn't do it. And Chris is always so gracious with his time. He has he's never said no. He always comes on the program whenever I ask him to do it. And the reason he couldn't do it last weekend is because he'd be on the first tee at that time. So Chris is sneaking in a few rounds of golf while he's retired, and I can't blame him.
And Chris is pretty good. I know better to go out and play golf with him and gamble. I know that's a bad move.
Leave your wallet at home.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll destroy you, that's for sure. He's a good athlete.
Well, this is going to be fantastic, Barry. By the way, visiting with Barry Pearl from Jockeys and Jeans, the 7th annual fundraiser coming up at Monmouth Park to benefit the PDJF. That's next Saturday. And Barry is this week's Industry Star of the Week because of the wonderful work that he does. Also, you're joined by Ed Donnelly, who does a lot of stuff there, too, and does a fantastic job. And what a team the two of you make.
Oh, thank you. Eddie's one of our founding members, and actually, he's the guy who really started this thing. Everybody said, well, Barry did. No, Eddie was the guy that did it, because what he did, he had wanted to get together a group of old-timers at Tampa, and, of course, him being a reverend and a minister, he looked how he could help people, and he kind of started this and put it together. And because I was retired, and also I had the business background on that, I said, okay, I'll take it from here and we'll go from there. But I do have a big announcement, and I think you're going to like this.
Go for it.
We have the first ever major presenting sponsor, Caesars Entertainment.
Yep, you stole my thunder. I was taking you there next. Yeah, you always got
to. Man, I'm sorry.
You got to recognize those guys. I mean, what a great organization. And for them to step up and do this and support disabled riders, fantastic, Barry.
Yeah, they came in on the $25,000 level. That's a pretty big number. And, they're really great people. I have to tip my hat to my good friend Brian Elmore from Indiana HBBA. He's the guy to put it together. And Brian's obviously an ambassador, but he put that thing together in 24 hours. And these folks are great, and they're in, and they want to help.
Well, we hope that everybody – who is listening will get a chance to participate, whether it's the live auction that's going to take place. And as you said, they can go to jockeysandjeans.com to learn more about that. Or if they want to show up at Monmouth, if they're in the area and they can make it there, they'll have an opportunity to rub elbows with some of the greatest ever to hop into the saddle. And it's all for a great cause and Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And Barry, again, I can't thank you enough for everything you do for PDJF. You know it's our official charity here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It has been for a long time. And all the best next Saturday, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate your support over the years. It's certainly from the very first one, from the second one to now. I mean, it's always a big help. And, we appreciate everybody that helps us, and we've grown so much. It's getting really crazy. you know, we're getting folks in the, who are by purchasing sponsorships that, I mean, they just, it comes out, okay, oh, hey, I heard about this, we want to do it, and they do. It's really, it makes you feel very good.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Barry Pearl here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Barry, all the best next Saturday, my friend. Have a wonderful event, and say hi to everybody for me.
I certainly will, and I hope to see you next time when we go down to Kentucky.
Let's do it.
Okay, bud.
All right, buddy. Barry Pearl, Jockeys and Jeans. You can go to jockeysandjeans.com to learn more about the fundraiser. And, by the way, donate to PDJF right there on their website. And Barry is this week's Industry Star of the Week, and that is presented every single Saturday morning by our good friend Stuart Morris. And what a consignment he does, and what a job he does with his consignments. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He knows his success is absolutely because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. All right, coming up next, I'll talk with Chauncey Morris from the KTA KTOB. He'll talk about the impact that those organizations have had on the Kentucky Downs meet and racing here in the Bluegrass State in general. It has been remarkable. It's a great story. He'll tell it next. But first, it's time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the wonderful folks at Lexus of Lexington.
Saturday, March 12, 1966, marked the end of an era in thoroughbred racing. It was Act 3, Scene 3 for a jockey who went out the way it was meant to be, a winner. That day was, without a scintilla of doubt, the singular most moving, dramatic day in the long and most illustrious history of Fable's Santa Anita Park. Indeed, there was more feeling and emotion than you could cut with a proverbial fork. Yes, more than on March 4, 1940, when Pappy, the great old C.S. Howard campaigner Seabiscuit, managed to score a victory and the Santa Anita handicap on what amounted to three legs and a veritable mountain of courage after coming out of retirement. And yes, more feeling than when Citation, thwarted first by injuries and then by his brilliant adversary Noor in his indomitable quest to become racing's very first million-dollar earner, finally made it on a golden California afternoon in July of 1951 at Hollywood Park. Because, you see, on this particular day, the final paragraph was written to an unbelievable storybook ending of the single most extraordinary saga of a jockey in all of racing's legend, lore, and mystique-filled history. On this day, that paragraph was written in capital letters and finished with an exclamation point. The gentleman who's the subject of this story was born in England, came to the racetrack out of a Canadian coal mine. Compositely, his career included 32,500 mounts, 6,032 winners, and a legacy among racing aficionados that lives to this day. In his final race, he was aboard George Royal, a Canadian bred at that, in a final twist of irony, and he won the San Juan Capistrano Handicap with a ride that was a trademark of his uncanny talent and had stamped him as the riding great for most of the four decades as a saddlesmith. His final day in the iron, so to speak, was announced with dramatic suddenness. It was totally unexpected and was, in no small measure, responsible for Santa Anita's largest crowd of the season, 60,000-plus. George Royal, our subject's mount, had won the Capistrano the year before, but had gone unplaced in four starts during the 1966 campaign and was listed at nearly 7-1 with betting public at post time. This in spite of the sentimental attachment to the subject of this dissertation who was in the saddle. Most of those in the vast assemblage on hand felt this rider had chucked up his final victory when he booted home a horse named Chiclero in the fourth race on that day's card. And that victory had been scored in rather typical fashion for this little reinsman on the Bill Daly and then nursing his mount home to the wire. The camera and newsmen duly recorded that bit of history, which, as it turned out, was not nearly of historic import it appeared to have been at the time. In the Capistrano, something warm and gentle and dramatic of the ilk of the Frank Capra classics of the cinema was about to unfold. As our man got a leg up in the paddock, the enormous throng cheered long and loud, and many openly wept for the little man who had provided countless thrills for the racing public all over the country. The little man bit his lip to keep from showing the tears welling in his eyes. The display of heartfelt adulation literally unbounded and heretofore unseen and unheard at a racetrack. While the race itself, Bobby Ussery took Plaque to the front to set the early fractions and was still in the lead and drawing away from his nearest rival, Polar C. But now Hillrise, who was the post-time favorite, and George Royal both commenced to move together from off the pace. Hillrise could not stay with George Royal's strong move, and as George Royal moved boldly toward the front runners in the brightly glistening late afternoon California sun, track announcer Joe Hernandez got the crowd cheering and screaming like a clap of thunder with the dramatic unfolding of the race to the wire. George Royal was fourth, third, second, with only Plaque to catch in the drive to the wire. With less than a furlong to run, George Royal came abreast of Plaque, and those two raced right together, matching strides in a heart-pounding display of thoroughbred racing. In the very final jump, our subject was able to get his horse up to stick his nose in front of the wire, and a finish that left a huge throng absolutely agog. Our man came back to the winner's circle for the last time, dismounted, got on the scale, and began that long, last walk back to the jockey's quarters, amidst both tears and cheers of adulation for a true champion. He'd gone out the way the script should have been written, a winner. That man and the story of that race were the stuff of which Shakespeare's dreams are made. He was Johnny Longden.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
The test of time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as a pillar of the turf, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year since 2000. This Keeneland September sale, Millridge offers a quality group throughout the various books, led by leading stallions Uncle Mo, Curlin, Candy Ride, Gunrunner, Kitten's Joy, and several promising first-year sires. Millridge will be showing at Barn 11 starting September 10th. Millridge, standing the test of time.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
To say swing the bend for home and come past the quarter pole, that's Big Dreaming still the front runner. Kid Mercury sticking on strongly. Moon Over Miami is lengthening with blinding acceleration. He hits the lead as they come to the eighth pole. It's Moon Over Miami off the also eligible list, kicking clear from Big Dreaming. And then Champ Rocket from a long way back. Moon Over Miami is the leader with a 16th left to go. Big Dreaming sticking to his guns gamely, but Moon Over Miami is the superior stayer in the Dueling Grounds Derby. Wins 3/4 of a length, Big Dreaming. Sham Rocket was 3 or 4 lengths back in third.
Welcome back. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. And that was Moon over Miami, winning last year's Dueling Grounds Derby at Kentucky Downs. The FanDuel Kentucky Downs meet begins tomorrow and will go through September 12th. There are 6 days of live racing. There are 6 graded stakes races. Going to talk more about that with Chauncey Morris from the KTA KTOB in just a minute. But it is time now to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
And today's first bet comes in race 10 at Prairie Meadows. It is the $50,000 Richard Radke Memorial. Number one, Stan's Miracle Man is 7-2 on the morning line and has a 31% win projection from first bet. He rates 11 points higher than the next closest rival and is a last out winner over the track. He makes his first two-turn attempt as he seeks his first career victory later today. Number one, Stan's Miracle Man in race 10 at Prairie Meadows is indeed today's first bet. And I'm back to visit with Chauncey Morris in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number one, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races. Up to 18 years or older and 21 years older in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
This year's FanDuel Kentucky Downs meet is America's richest race meet. Think about this. If you are Kentucky bred, you are competing for almost $16 million in total purses. If you're not a Kentucky bred, well, it's not too shabby there either. The purses are still higher than the national average, $2.25 million plus given away per day if you are indeed a Kentucky bred, and a lot of that courtesy of the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. And I now welcome in Chauncey Morris from the KTA KTOB to talk more about the impact that that organization has had on racing, not just at Kentucky Downs, but in the Bluegrass State as a whole. Chauncey, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well and excited to kick things off at Kentucky Downs. You know, I mentioned those numbers, and those are lofty numbers, and they're not possible without the KTDF. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, sure. The KTDF has been around since 1978. It's generated off of 0.75% of live and historical racing bets. We've always held true to the tenet that here in Kentucky there is no restricted racing. So just as you said on that intro there, the association purses are very healthy, but you can bring any horse that you want to here and race at any of our 5 flat tracks. Just you won't be eligible for the extra KTDF allotment. There's a great story. Just yesterday, there was somebody that was lucky enough to get into one of their maiden races, but unfortunately hadn't registered prior to entry the KTDF registration, so it's not going to be eligible. And they said, I'm only going to be eligible for $65,000 of the base purse, which, you know, it's not a good problem to have at all. But it just kind of tells you on the strength of Kentucky Downs, I think the circuit, association, and KTDF purses, and that horse was one of 35 that had been nominated to that particular race. So it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a wonderful problem to have. And the KTDF makes up close to 40% of the Kentucky Downs purses. And you mentioned historical horse racing, Chauncey. Spell that out a little bit more, how the KTDF derives funds from the historical horse racing, because that is something here in Kentucky that has just been a massive, massive coup.
So back in 2010, 2011, Kentucky Racing was really facing some very stiff competition from a lot of racino states, not only in major racing states like Pennsylvania, but also along our border as well. That's the thing that everybody has to remember is on our border, we also have competing racetracks, and a lot of them are also casino states as well. So the Governor Steve Beshear and his racing commission, they took a bold step and interpreted the machines, the historical racing machines that had been created at Oakland Park to be parimutuel wagering, and they allowed those to operate here in the state. First it was Kentucky Downs, and then subsequently then it was Ellis Park, then Keeneland Red Mile, and then now there's multiple facilities around the state, and they are producing, generating some very important income. Now, it's hugely important to distinguish that these are not slot machines. They behave very differently. They pay out very differently. They're also taxed very differently. But we've been it's a state of 4 million people, and the gaming operators, they've really applied some lessons on how to render those machines competitive in the marketplace, still with those four other states that are contiguous to us that have other gaming activities. And racing has been a wonderful beneficiary of it.
Yeah, that recent decision by the legislature, I can remember talking about it when it was going through the process, that decision to amend the law to allow the historical horse racing machines to be considered part of the parimutuel wagering it's meant everything to racing here in the state, at least in terms of the purse structure. We talk about how good the purses are and the impact of KTDF on those purses. Chauncey, where do you think the purses would be and racing in the state would be if that had gone the other way and that law had not been amended?
Yeah, Senate Bill 120, it really is transformational because it codifies all the hard work and sacrifice that everybody, racetracks, horsemen, all participants, owners, most importantly, have invested into the game since 2011, 2012, and it was sort of like a guillotine that was hanging over us. It went the right way, but had it gone the wrong way, all right, let's speculate on that. We know that we have some facilities that without HHR, they probably wouldn't exist. With HHR, there's been investments in places. There's been investments at all of our five flat tracks and building some new standardbred tracks, and that is absolutely unheard of in the rest of the United States. I mean, not to brag at all, but we are – the business plan, the business model for racing here in Kentucky is a profitable one, and it has enabled everybody to sit down and say, what is racing really going to look like in 2021? Well, we know that we have to put the safety and welfare of our equine and human athletes paramount. And so we've been able to have the money to do that, and that has been hugely, hugely important. Then being able to make investments on making fans more comfortable and really bringing a nicer owner's experience. That's something that we're able to do. So with it, limitless. Without it, we would have been in some very dire straits.
Talking with Chauncey Morris, who is the executive director of the KTA, KTOB, that's the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association and Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. Chauncey, if we see, and we have seen, this impact that the KTDF has had on the purses, and we see the racing circuit here in Kentucky be very strong, the purse structure be very, very strong, it continues to grow. Talk about how that impacts everything else. We talk about the racing product, but then you have the sales that come here to Kentucky at Fasig Tipton and at Keeneland, and you have the breeders that are benefiting from this too. Talk about how everything just kind of works together.
I, along with Elizabeth Jensen from KEEP, we just testified to a task force in Frankfurt about this, that when you have really strong purses here in Kentucky, because you're coupling that with the best commercial breeding market in the world, arguably, then it's easier for owners to justify keeping a string of horses or more horses in training here. Those larger national and international purely racehorse owners or racing operations, that they're able to say, okay, I want to spend, I know that I've always sold horses in Kentucky, I'm breeding my mares in Kentucky, I'm boarding my mares in Kentucky, but now I'm able to race more with legitimate returns. You know, the returns to owners, that's something that we talk about British racing, we talk about American racing, where it happens to be. At the end of the day, the owners are putting up all of the investment, taking a huge amount of risk, and being able to return back to owners. This is why New York has always been as strong as it is. That's hugely, hugely important to do while other states are contracting. While COVID and trade disruptions have interrupted maybe our export market, that it's not as strong as it used to be because there's all sorts of roadblocks going on, we find that there's another outlet, a strong racing outlet here in Kentucky, and that's keeping the attention of those leading racehorse owners here, and that's a very positive thing.
When you think of the sport of thoroughbred racing, the first state, the first thing that comes to mind is Kentucky. You think about the Kentucky Derby, and that's one thing that people all over the world, even if they don't follow horse racing, will know. They'll know that brand, the Kentucky Derby. They'll know Kentucky is known for horse racing. It seems strange, Chauncey, to be talking about Kentucky facing competition from other states, but it's a reality, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, look, we have to be very clear-eyed about this, that last year's numbers, everybody's seen our advertising on TV, in digital, print media, what have you, that we had the highest purses. Well, that's because we were able to run for most of the year with just a very brief interlude where we were unable to do so. It complicated things, but we kept the doors open as far as business was concerned. But when I say we have to be clear-eyed, don't for a second think that the folks in New York are taking their eye off the ball. They're not. It's still the largest, most populous state. It's still the largest as far as importance in racing. And Oaklawn also, you know, you look at, it's 52 days of racing, but the largesse that they have from their gaming operations and their commitment to racing is also something that we're going to have to compete with. But we will. We'll do so because there's a very collegial atmosphere here in Kentucky with regulator, horsemen, associations, meaning the racetracks, the stakeholders. We know that we have something very special here that has been growing over time, and we have to make some strategic investments and strategic decisions in order to keep that going.
The Sunday opening day program at Kentucky Downs features the Dueling Grounds Oaks, which is a $500,000 race, the Dueling Grounds Derby, which is a $750,000 race,
yeah.
And then it's followed by the 11th race, the final race of the day. How about this? It's a 6.5-furlong maiden special weight race with a purse of $135,000. And to show you the impact that KTDF is having, $64,800 is coming from the KTDF with that $135,000 purse. Chauncey, I can't imagine where this would be without KTDF.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here. Kentucky Downs, they were clearly the pioneers on taking the ball and running with historical racing and generating as much KTDF and also sharing those Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund dollars with their sister tracks. That's very positive. American racing also needs more racing like Kentucky Downs, where you have a premium product. Also on turf, you know, we've got lots of turf runners here that have performed at their highest levels, not only in the United States, but around the world. So that's very positive. We've just done, starting to do the dribs and drabs of approving dates for the tracks. And so Kentucky Downs is adding, has gotten permission, and they look to be adding another live race date for 2022. That's positive. Keeping more horses, more of the horse populations. When everybody talks about inventory in California, New York, Florida, what have you, the ability to have that year-round circuit here, that keeps that inventory here in Kentucky, and that makes for a superlative betting product.
What's the key to keeping this momentum going, Chauncey?
I'd go back to, we have to continue being collegial and working together, frankly, because that's something that we haven't. I mean, we have to be also clear-eyed about that. We haven't in the past. You know, this is a game built on competition. But we're, as long as we can agree on big things, economics, safety, then the sport as a whole will prosper. And that's something that we have a commitment to do. And as long as we keep that commitment to each other, then we'll continue to thrive.
You have an open forum here this morning, Chauncey, a national voice, international voice. We have listeners in 147 countries that come to our website to listen to the podcast and so on. What do you want horsemen and owners and breeders to know about racing and the product that we have in Kentucky now?
I'd first say, you know, it's my job to say this, that you ought to look at putting horses in training here in Kentucky. But there'd be a lot of reasons to back that up. First, that, you know, Kentucky bred, really, you look at Cartier Awards, Eclipse Awards, okay, Eclipse Awards, that's here, it's a domestic affair, but the leading horses around the world imported, many of those, oftentimes, they come from here. And if you look at where the returns to owners as far as prize money is concerned, is we stack up very, very strongly. So that's something that if you want to be a part of success, which every racehorse owner I've ever met does, that's something to really look at.
Well, Chauncey, it's been a wonderful ride. It's been great to see it grow. It's been a lot of hard work by a lot of people. And I'm going to commend you and the team and everybody at KTA, KTOB, and the Thoroughbred Development Fund on all the hard work. Well done. Keep it rolling, and can't wait to get to Kentucky Downs.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Chauncey Morris here on HRRN. What a, I mean, smart guy, right? A smart guy. They have made a lot of correct moves, but it hasn't come easy. It's been a battle, and it's a battle that right now is paying huge dividends as we get ready to welcome in that meet at Kentucky Downs, the FanDuel Kentucky Downs meet, which begins tomorrow. I'll be back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch with Spun to Run, the wonder catch coming to the eighth pole. Spun to Run drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third. But Spun to Run has run away. Gerard Ortiz and Spun to Run, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainsway Stallion Spun to Run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple graded stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesville.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
My sister Nat is on the move from fourth. Bo Bell on her outside. And Olympic Games is at the back of the pack as they come off the turn and enter the stretch. And it is Fool's Gold with the lead here. Fool's Gold in front. A little more than two lengths. My sister Nat is now kicking in. Mississippi is in between horses. Bo Bell is in fourth. It's Fool's Gold. Mississippi. And on the outside, My Sister Nat. My Sister Nat has the momentum. Mississippi is there. It is My Sister Nat to win the way. My Sister Nat over Mississippi, Fool's Gold, and Bo Bell.
John Embriel bringing them home in the Grade 3 Weah Stakes. That was at Saratoga last August. It was also the last win for My Sister Nat, who is 0-6 since that effort, but she does have three runner-up efforts. She's been knocking on the door. We'll see if My Sister Nat can give Chad Brown a seventh win in the Flower Bowl coming up later today. Chad has more wins in that race than any trainer in the history of the sport, and Jose Ortiz will be back aboard My Sister Nat trying to guide her to victory. It's a short field, just six horses entered into that race. Seven horses entered into that race, so not a big field. My Sister Nat might be able to work out a winning trip. She comes out of that second-place finish in the Glens Falls, but certainly Chad Brown has had a stranglehold, as has owner Peter Brandt. Peter has won the race four times, and this would be number five if My Sister Nat can get the victory later today. This is opening day of archery season for deer in the state of Kentucky. And so many of you, I know, have been listening to this show for a long, long time, and you've heard me talk about Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, which is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And I tell you every single week that the Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything that you could possibly need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. So if you're going to be hitting the woods, whether it's this weekend or in the days coming up or maybe even later in the season when we get to the muzzleloader season or we get to rifle season, stop in and see Tevis McCauley and the great team at Whitetail Heaven Outfitters. It is the Elite Outdoor Superstore there in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And, hey, they even have two indoor archery ranges. So if you're looking to do a little fine-tuning, maybe you're looking to buy a new bow, you can give it a test run there with their two indoor archery ranges at the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Coming up next, Acacia Courtney is going to join me. She, of course, with Fox Sports and with NYRA. She's going to talk about the big racing coming up at Saratoga later today, and it is a jam-packed closing weekend. Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. I'll welcome in Katie Tolbert, who is a longtime exercise rider for Brad Cox. She is a partner with Traverse Stakes winner Essential Quality in the morning. Can't wait to visit with Katie. She is a true unsung hero. That comes up at 9:20. And then Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher talking about Happy Saver going in today's Jockey Club Gold Cup, the defending champion looking to go back-to-back in that race. And that comes up at 9:40. Of course, in the room with Sean Clancy at 10 o'clock Eastern. He sits down one-on-one with jockey Robbie Davis. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history at 10:25. And then I'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with the voice of the Breeders' Cup himself, Larry Colmus, as he prepares to call the Kentucky Downs meet starting tomorrow, and then looking ahead to the Breeders' Cup as well. So a lot of great things coming your way here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. I kick it all off. Hour two of three is next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, if you missed any portion of the first half of the show, head back to our website. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net. Barry Pearl is with me from Jockeys and Jeans, talking about their fundraiser to benefit PDJF next Saturday at Monmouth Park. And you just heard from Chauncey Morris. Fantastic stuff from Chauncey, talking about the impact of the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund on racing and breeding here in the state, and also the KTA-KTOB. He has just done yeoman's work, and that interview will be posted on our website later as well if you want to go back and take a listen. Certainly some great things there from Chauncey. Poll question today, going to give you a few choices here. The poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference, going to keep it pretty simple too. Who wins today's Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga? Give you some choices. Happy Saver, the defending champion, Max Player, who defeated Happy Saver last time out, or Forza D'Oro, who is looking to prove that he belongs at this level. And then the fourth category is Other. And if you choose Other, please specify who you think is going to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup later today. Again, Happy Saver, Max Player, Forza D'Oro, and then you can choose from one of the others. If you click the Other button, just let me know who you think it's going to be. And again, that poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. You can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do the social media thing, that's cool. I get it. You're talking to a guy or listening to a guy that wants to go back to a landline and an answering machine. So I get it. But you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Go ahead and let me know your thoughts on today's Jockey Club Gold Cup. Someone I know is going to have some strong opinions is Acacia Courtney with Fox Sports and with the Naira. She is affectionately known here on the network as the Little A, as she is an HRN alum, and very happy to welcome in Acacia to the show this morning. Little A, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing very well. It is so great to hear your voice and really have enjoyed watching you and the team with all the racing coverage this meet.
Thank you so much. It's been amazing to have the fans back and have the crowd back this year after 2020, as we all know. I think it was just difficult in so many ways. And so we're really grateful to everybody that's come to the track every day and been supporting. And it's really a true honor and a pleasure to be able to cover horse racing in this way.
Let's start there, Acacia, since you brought that up, because I think it's a wonderful point. I've heard a lot of the NFL football players talk about the fact that they are energized by having fans back in the stands throughout the preseason and looking forward to doing that throughout the regular season, too, after what happened in 2020 with no fans in attendance. Is it the same for you when you're walking around Saratoga, you're doing a broadcast, maybe even when you talk to the jockeys? Are the horsemen more energized? Are you more energized because of the fact that we do have fans back in attendance?
Oh, well, 100%. And I think that, you know, throughout the past year and a half, it was almost like we had gotten used to adapting to the new normal. That was that there wasn't a crowd there, and especially being at Belmont in the spring, which is such a big track anyway, when we were able to welcome fans back, it was a limited number. So coming up to Saratoga, and that's a place where you are just so used to having that electricity, which wasn't the case last year, of course. And it really, I think throughout the first couple of weeks, you could really feel it. Just things that you hadn't realized you had missed so much, like the groan or the cheer with a photo finish when they played the slow-mo replay. And, you know, those kinds of things that you hadn't even thought about. And, you know, being able to see fans stop you as you're walking back and forth from the paddock to the front side, and people that you haven't seen in a couple of years. And it's been so special to see the happiness and the joy that Saratoga brings everybody, and to be able to share that with all of the fans this year too.
As you look back on this very unique meet and celebratory meet, if you will, in Saratoga Springs, what are a couple of the moments that come to mind immediately that are going to stand out to you? Maybe it's a performance by a horse or a jockey or a trainer feat, an owner feat, whatever it might be. What are a couple of the moments that are going to stand out to you when you think about the 2021 Saratoga meet?
Well, I think watching Steve Asmussen break the record and become the all-time winningest trainer in North America, we all knew it was just a matter of time, and it had become you know, we were following so carefully, which is typically the case for show, because it's a great storyline. But Steve runs horses just so many tracks. We weren't sure if it was going to happen at Saratoga. And he tied the race, the record out of town, but broke the record at Saratoga. And just seeing that all unfold and following along and talking to Steve, I interviewed him when he was one away from tying. And just like the bubbling excitement that he had, it was so great, and it reminds you how difficult this sport is and how special it is and such an amazing accomplishment. So that was really wild to see throughout this summer. We broke the record as far as handle during a Saratoga meet with 5 days to go before the meet was even over. I just cannot say thank you enough to all of the fans and the bettors and horsemen and everybody that made it possible, and wagers on the great sport of horse racing, because it has been a trying year. And, you know, you hope that you've been able to bring in some new fans along the way. And then you hope that you've been able to keep them. And I think that that's been really special to see as well. And also, of course, with people back on track this year too, the excitement every single race day, essential quality in the Travers. On a personal note, seeing Gufo win the sword dancer and kind of breakthrough in the performance we always knew that he had. There's so many moments, but I think watching Steve Asmussen's journey and that incredible feat, I think was probably a big one that'll really stand out for me this summer.
Talking with Naira and Fox Sports analyst Acacia Courtney here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the little A, as I like to call her. Some might call her Akakia. We've heard that before. How often do people mispronounce your name, Acacia?
A lot. I still get called Maggie too, and Maggie gets called Acacia. So, you know, it's we both walk really fast from the paddock to the winner's circle, and I think it's kind of like a blonde blur, which can confuse people sometimes. Or I get called Courtney a lot, and I've gotten called a variation of every pronunciation of my first name. So yes, Courtney is really my last name. It's not my first name. I'm not tricking anybody. And Acacia is really my first name.
Yeah, and a lovely first name it is, and what a job she does on television, along with her teammate Maggie and the rest of the team. Let's talk about the racing now. A big card coming up later today, highlighted by the Jockey Club Gold Cup. We'll start there. That's our poll question this morning at HRRN on Twitter, asking people to weigh in on who they feel is going to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup. It's only a field of six. Happy Saver, Max Player, Forza D'Oro, and then folks can choose other and select somebody else. What do you think? Does Happy Saver defend the title, or are you clicking on somebody else for this poll question, Acacia?
I am leaning towards Forza D'Oro. Obviously, for me, I like to see them in the paddock before the race and see how they're handling things. Happy Saver has done very little wrong. No, it was not his best performance last time out, the Suburban. It was a wet track, but I didn't think there was really a lot of excuse that day. It is disappointing, unfortunately, that Mystic Guide is on the shelf and we won't get to see him in here, because I think that would add a really interesting layer. And while I've always liked Max Player, speaking of the winningest trainer in North America, Steve Asmussen got him to deliver in the Suburban last time, but he got really a perfect trip. So for me, I'm going with Forza Dioro. He's one that I've always been a fan of. Another one that's had some stops and starts in his career. But I thought that that prep race at Saratoga, going the 9 furlongs off of a layoff, was a really impressive effort visually, just the way that he did it. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. And he does have the inside post. Where is the starting gate is positioned, going a mile and a quarter. That's not something I'm concerned about. And he has some tactical speed and can get up in the game early on.
Were you surprised to see Max Player defeat Happy Saver and Mystic Guide? I know it was an 11-1 upset. Were you as surprised as a lot of people when he won the Grade 2 Suburban at Belmont on July 3rd?
It was a surprise. Again, he's always a horse that I've liked. And I will say he did not have a good trip at all in the Pimlico Special. He was completely up against the bias of the track. Last Judgment wired the field. He was way off of it. That whole weekend, Preakness weekend, it was inside speed. And he was completely up against it and kind of never was able to make his big run. He also probably looked the best that we've seen him look in the Suburban as well. So he was one that I thought was not without a chance. I thought he was a bit too big of a price, and that Pimlico Special kind of dirtied him up as far as that form did go. But if you look at the trip and, again, what he had to overcome in that spot, again, was I surprised to see him beat two what seemed to be very good top-quality horses? Yeah, it was a surprise for sure, and I think that showed on the betting board as well. But again, he got the great trip, a terrific ride from Ricardo Santana, and he gutted out the victory that it seemed as a three-year-old he always had in him, and you were just kind of waiting for him to show up with something like that.
In about 30 minutes, I'm going to be joined by Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher to talk about the defending champion, Happy Saver. I'll make sure I let him know that you're picking against him.
I'm sure he will not be insulted. Todd's been around this game long enough, and he's got a great sense of humor about it, too. But I'm sure he'd be happy to prove me wrong.
Well, that is race number 12, the Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup. And again, I said this at the top of the show. It seems so strange to be talking about that race on Labor Day weekend at Saratoga, because it's a traditional feature at Belmont Park. Yes, it's been held at Aqueduct on a few different occasions years and years and years ago, but pretty much ever since I have been alive, it has been at Belmont Park, as has the Flower Bowl Stakes, which is a Grade 1. It's the race preceding the Jockey Club Gold Cup on the Saturday afternoon program, race 11, mile and 3/8 on the inner turf for the older turf mares, fillies and mares, and the winner going to punch their ticket to the Philly and Mare Turf. Tell me a little bit more about the Flower Bowl.
Well, this is a race, I think, it could be a very big hour, actually, for trainer Bill Mott, as he has Warlike Goddess in the Flower Bowl, who has just really flourished this year. Filly by English Channel, she has loved getting to go these long-distance races. To be able to close like she did in the Orchid down at Gulfstream Park, I think, made it even more impressive. And her Glens Falls win was huge. Over my sister Nat, who's never been a horse that I've been a tremendous fan of, but she's incredibly consistent. So I think that the race very much revolves around Warlike Goddess, and if she can make it 4 wins in a row in what's already been a really impressive career.
How much do we know about American Bridge, who comes in after racing in Italy last time, but she's a British bred. She's been pretty well traveled over in Europe. This will be her U.S. debut. What have you heard about American Bridge?
Yeah, she's very intriguing, running in Italy and France, and you know, she hasn't run in group company since that last race, and she was able to get the victory that day. I do think that sometimes in turf races, when we see horses coming from Europe and trying to translate that form over to the U.S., immediately we think that they have an edge. But I think it's important to kind of look through and see what they've actually done. So she did win a Group 3 in Italy. It's not going to be one of the overall toughest Group 3 type of races as she comes into a Grade 1 with some strong competition in America. That said, she's one that will have absolutely no problem with the distance, whereas a couple of others of these here in this race maybe will have a little question as far as if this is really how far they want to go. To me, American Bridge, of course, Peter Brandt has had a tremendous amount of success bringing horses from Europe to run here in the U.S. in some of these turf races in particular. She's one that I'm going to be intrigued by to see how she breaks too. Oftentimes, as we know, horses coming from Europe as well, and looking at some of her European form, she's not one that has a lot of early speed. And it is a long race, but with a shorter field too and some strong competition in here, seeing how she breaks, the rider tees has to get her out of the gate and see if she can stack up. It adds a really interesting layer to the race.
One of two horses entered into the Flower Bowl for owner Peter Brandt. He has, of course, won the race more than any owner in history, four times, his first in 1980, and then 2019 being his most recent. We'll see if he can add to that resume coming up later today. Two other stakes races. You have race number 8, which is the Grade 3 Saranac. And, yes, I know we're kind of working backwards here, little A. And then the Grade 2 Prioress, which is race number 5. Tell me a little bit more. We'll start with the Saranac, and then we'll jump into the Prioress. But tell me about those two races.
Well, with the Saranac, I think Public Sector should be very exciting to see him again. He ran at the start of August, which the Hall of Fame feels like that win was just yesterday, to be honest. The last month has flown by, but owner Seth Klarman of Klarovich Stables did tell me before the Hall of Fame that they had considered running Public Sector in the Saratoga Derby because he was doing so well, but they thought the mile distance versus going a little bit longer in the Saratoga Derby was going to be more suited to him. And obviously they made the right call as he was able to win the Hall of Fame. I thought he looked terrific that day. I've become a big fan of his. And I think he should be tough in the Saranac once again, sticking around this mile, mile and a 16th race as well. For me, it kind of revolves around him. You could never leave out Wesley Ward, like the King. He's going to be the speed of the race and coming off of a second place finish in the Kent behind Yes This Time, who did try his hand at the Saratoga Derby.
And how about the 3-year-old ladies in the Grade 2 Prioress early in the day?
And looking at the Prioress earlier as I scroll up there, this one going backwards, as you said, super sensational for me is the one that I've got my eyes on just as far as a horse to beat. I thought that she won the victory ride so impressively, and it kind of seems like she was a horse that got lost in the shuffle in the test, and Bella Sophia just kept going faster and faster and faster that day, and she was able to keep on, and I know it was a distant second, but she beat Search Results, who had run so well in the Kentucky Oaks earlier this year. Super sensational, I think, is the one to beat. But how good has Oksana been in her last couple of starts? I know they've been at Parks, but Tim Mills has had some well-manned horses come to Saratoga this summer. She got a 96 buyer speed figure for her, a maiden breaking score, and it was against Pennsylvania breds. She's the talented filly, and I'm going to be really intrigued to see how she stacks up against this field.
Yeah, she drew the rail, so she'll have to break well under Irad Ortiz Jr. in order to get a good position, not get shuffled back. But yeah, she certainly looks like she could be any kind. Isn't that one of the cool things about Saratoga, that horses come from all over and they have big time success on smaller circuits, and now they have an opportunity to prove that they belong on the big stage, and that's what Oksana will try to do.
Absolutely. I mean, you think back to a horse like VQuist last year, who had come from running in Pennsylvania and won the Spinaway and kind of, again, showed that she belonged, showed that the performance that she had put in Pennsylvania wasn't a fluke, and of course going on to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. These kinds of races for younger horses, we've got all the two-year-olds on display this weekend too with the Spinaway and the Hopeful coming up. It's just so exciting to see as you really see the cream rise to the crop and who we're going to see make some more noise throughout the rest of this year.
I have to tell you, Acacia, the name that I love in that Prioress Stakes is number 2, Eeny, Meeny, Miney, Moe. It's a cool name. I think John Embriel can have a little fun with it and gets the services of Victor Espinoza, Triple Crown winning jockey. So it's cool to see Victor back in the saddle at Saratoga.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one he rode at Monmouth last time out, started out really strong at Pimlico. Again, we'll see how she stacks up, getting the blinkers on. It should make things really interesting because she showed a lot of speed, even though she hasn't been good out of the gate. We'll see if those blinkers can help her channel that speed and what that does to Oksana trotting down on the inside as well.
Acacia, I'm going to let you go. I know it's a busy day, but I have to tell you one story. As I was listening to you go through the analysis today, I was thinking back to the day that you and I made the drive down from Saratoga to Monmouth. We were broadcasting the Haskell, and we had a long conversation about broadcasting. You were just kind of getting started with the radio side of things. And to see where you were then, where you are today, and the fantastic job you do on television, I couldn't be more proud. So keep up the wonderful work, and thanks so much for the time this morning.
Oh, thank you, Mike. That means a lot, and you helped me so much and breaking into this industry, which I get asked a lot. You know, how did you get started? How did you learn how to do interviews? And I always say I had you and the whole HRRN team take a chance on me at the beginning, and I'm so very grateful. So thank you. It means a lot.
Yeah, kick those Naira guys to the curb and come back home. We miss you. You belong on radio. No, actually, you belong on TV. Trust me. I'm the face for radio. You should be on television.
Thank you.
Little A, appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy it, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it. Good luck.
All right, Acacia Courtney here on the Horse Racing Radio. What a fantastic talent she really is, and just does a tremendous job. And I am truly very, very proud of everything that she's been able to accomplish. Going to get to another break when I come back. I think you're going to be proud of this next guest, too. It is time for Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Stay tuned. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
They're coming down for the finish. It is Essential Quality and Midnight Bourbon. Essential Quality has won the Run Happy Travers. He won the Belmont with class. He wins the Run Happy Travers with style.
Champion Essential Quality did it again with another game victory in the historic Midsummer Derby at Saratoga last Saturday. The Godolphin homebred and future Darley Stallion recorded his fourth Grade 1 win and is now 8-for-9 lifetime with earnings of more than $4.2 million. In the last 50 years, Essential Quality and Easy Goer are the only champion two-year-olds to win both the Belmont and the Travers. And that makes Essential Quality your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Learn more about all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
It is! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, there are so many unsung heroes in our sport. I have the privilege now of welcoming yet another. That is exercise writer Katie Tolbert, who is partners with Champion Essential Quality in the morning for trainer Brad Cox. And Essential Quality going on to win the Travers last week had to bring a huge smile to her face. And she's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Katie, good morning. Congratulations on being this week's unsung hero.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
Tell me about watching Essential Quality stroll to victory. Well, I can't say stroll. It was a battle. But seeing him hold on in that Travers Stakes last weekend.
Yeah, he keeps us waiting for sure. But but he's a little bit like that. He kind of only does what he has to do. And it helps all of us that we know that Louis does such a good job with him and has so much confidence in him. You try not to worry because he doesn't look worried. He certainly looks like he knows what he's doing. And he usually gets there for us. So.
Is he like that in the mornings too? Does he just kind of do enough in the mornings, or do you get more from him in the mornings?
He's a little bit playful sometimes, like with the pony. He wants to kind of play with the pony. And, you know, sometimes when he's feeling good, he kind of jumps around a little. But he's actually, I would love to say that he's super difficult to ride and I am exceptional. But he is really not all that. Like, he kind of takes it easy on himself too. So it's more just keeping him focused and paying attention and making sure that, you know, you stay where you're supposed to be and, you know, focused and stuff. But he's pretty easy on himself, which is great for us because it helps a lot in keeping him sound and happy. So
what's been your favorite Essential Quality moment?
For sure winning the Travers, but he's just such a cool horse and it's been fun kind of getting to know him. I worked in the barn with him in Churchill, but wasn't riding him until I came up here to Saratoga. And I feel like I really have kind of gotten to know him now, and he's really cool. So, but for sure winning the Travers.
Yeah, that was pretty special. Talking with Katie Tolbert, exercise rider with Brad Cox. She has been around some really good horses in her career. Katie, let's go back to the beginning. This unsung hero segment, all about you. Take me through your background. How did you first get introduced to horses and to racing?
I have always loved animals of all kinds and especially horses. And, but I grew up in kind of upstate South Carolina and there's no racing and not a whole lot of, you know, people have horses in their backyard. They do some Western stuff and there's some, you know, there's some show horses, but it's small time kind of things, which is fine. I loved all of it. But I didn't have, as my aunt had a horse on my grandparents' farm and my cousins had some horses and I'd, you know, play around when I could, but I didn't do anything serious until when I went to college. I studied equine business. I went to Clemson, got a degree in that, and they had a farm, and I worked at the farm and took all the classes I could and had some friends that had horses and went and rode anytime I could and graduated and still wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I figured, well, if there's a degree, there must be some jobs somewhere. So I applied for an internship program that came and talked to us at Clemson from Kentucky. That was a 6-month internship, and I got that and ended up at Judmont Farms doing a 6-month internship in the fall of 2006. And we were mostly breaking babies, but we lived on the farm, and so anything that came up, they were really great about, hey, do you want to help us with this? Do you want to help with that? And so we helped in the breeding shed. We'd go back at night and turn horses out, you know, all that. And then I ended up staying on and working with them for a few years. And then they knew that I was kind of interested in doing some more things. And the horses, at that time, the horses they had that stayed in the U.S. went to Bobby Frankel. So they set me up to go and work for a winter. I went down to Gulfstream for a winter with his crew, came up to Keeneland, Belmont, then ended up back in Kentucky, and he died that fall. So it was a kind of short-lived stint with their crew. Then I worked in Kentucky for a year or two, and then ended up with a farm called Sagamore Farm that's based out of Maryland.
Sure.
I worked there for almost 10 years through the, like, three trainers that they had, ending with Stan Huff, who was a big trainer in New York and all over for a while. We had a really nice horse at the very end named Global Campaign that ended up running third in the Classic. So that was exciting. then I went back to work with Horacio De Paz, who trained for Sagamore before, for a little while in New York, until I started with Brad this winter in Florida. So started with him in Florida this winter, did Florida, Churchill, and up here. I'm headed back to Churchill soon, I think. So.
Yeah, very cool. What a great background, a great story.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been really lucky.
I was listening to you tell your story about, you know, going to Clemson and, you know, getting the degree in animal science and then, you know, kind of things going from there. When I started on radio, I never imagined I'd be in radio. I was working at Keeneland and Horse ID, and there was somebody doing a show, my mentor, Pete Coolis. He said, hey, what do you think of sitting in and being a co-host with me on the radio? When I moved to Kentucky in 1997, I didn't imagine that I was going to be on radio. And it's funny how things just kind of develop and grow in your life. When you were going to Clemson and you were attending those classes, did you ever picture yourself working on the racetrack the way you are today?
No. And not to say that I wouldn't have wanted to, I guess I just didn't know that I could or know how to get to there. I think when I was there, I don't think so. I mean, like, I watched racing as a kid on TV, but I, you know, it's not something I really ever realized that I would be able to do or be involved with or that I could get involved with. So it's been really fun.
What do you like most about it?
I mean, I love the horses, but I love all horses. And I mean, it is really great to be around ones like this, but I love animals, and I like the history. I like the early mornings, watching the sunrise, being on the track and, you know, being around, excuse me, you know, all the really important people. And, you know, it's really cool to like be involved with. Like I said, I just love the horses, and I love to watch. Like, I could sit and just watch races all day without, I don't care who the horses are. I don't care who the people are. Like, I just like to watch them. Like, it's just, they're athletes and they're amazing. And it's really cool.
This segment, Unsung Heroes, was created to recognize people like yourself, Katie, who do wonderful work, are such an integral part of making the game a success, but aren't the ones doing the interviews after the race. Like, Brad Cox is the guy in the spotlight,
right?
But he'd be the
Which
first to tell you.
For me,
it takes a village, right?
Yeah,
it takes a village. But I thought it was important to recognize you and your accomplishments and to hear your story now. I think it's even more important to get this story out there for people that might be thinking about getting involved. Take me through your typical day. How does it start for Katie Tolbert? What do you do? Walk me through it.
We get to the barn probably between 4:15, 4:30. We have we have a decent number of people here. So depending on how many people we have, I do more or less like first thing in the morning. But, you know, the assistants sort of, we either go through and check the horses, make sure they've eaten, make sure they're, you know, check temps, make sure everything is going smoothly or has gone smoothly overnight. Set up tack for the sets that are getting ready to go out. I spend most of the morning riding. And here we're pretty busy. We get the horses out, everybody jogs on the road to like make sure they look good. We put bandages on everybody. We start riding around 5:30, and like today we took out 10 sets or so. So we finish around 10. Then at the end of the morning, depending on if we have racing, we get stuff set up for races, get, you know, everybody's equipment set up and make sure everything is organized for people that are going to be coming back in the afternoons to run the horses. If we have any vet work to do, the vets come at the end of training if they need to, you know, look at anything or scope horses that have breezed or anything like that. Set up things with the blacksmith. Make sure, you know, it's a lot of just keeping everything running smoothly and keeping everybody communicating and organized and making sure everything's getting done right. Feeding.
Yeah.
And then if we're not racing, we have a break in the middle of the afternoon, come back, make feed for everybody, check everything again, clean up. There's a lot of cleaning.
You said that essential quality was pretty easy to handle and not much out of the ordinary with him. But tell me about the most challenging horse that you've ever been aboard in the mornings.
I've ridden a few that are really strong, and that's always a little difficult. I have one now that's a little bit challenging, and actually she was really good this morning. But the hardest thing that well, the one that I have now that's really tricky is she's very sensitive mouth, but she's also really strong. So it's a really fine balance of trying to, like, not be too rough with her, but also keep her at the speed that you want to keep her at and going the right direction. So, you know, and breaking babies, you always run into ones that are dumb and jump around and act like idiots. But I've also been really fortunate to work with people that have had a lot of really well-bred horses and really well-handled horses and very good help. That makes a huge difference to riders, you know, because even if you have trouble with horses, you know, we have a pony that can go with us, or we have people that can help you get back and forth to the track, or, you know, we set up the schedule well so that they go out in a set that's quiet, or, you know, and that, like, that makes a huge difference. You know, if there's a lot of people that don't have that, and it makes it really difficult when you have a difficult horse.
As the exercise rider that's getting on the horses in the morning, how much interaction do you have with the jockeys who are riding in the afternoon? Do you talk much to them and give them a little insight, or is that something you just don't do?
Maybe a little. I mean, Brad does a lot of that, and Brad is especially good, I think, with talking to his riders and getting opinions and on how the horses are going or what they like or what they're happy with. And some people, you ride for them and they want you to come back and say, oh yeah, you went good. And if you have something more to say, like, they're not interested in hearing that. And Brad is really good about listening to your opinions and try, you know, if I say, like, hey, I think he might go better with this bit, or I think he might go better with blinkers, or, you know, I think he might do better like this or that, like, he's always willing to, like, try something or, you know, do. And I guess it helps that you have good riders that will give you good input, but it's really nice to feel like you're able to have those sort of conversations and that it, you know, that he cares. So that's one thing that's really, really rewarding about this job in particular.
What would you like the next chapter to be, Katie? Do you want to train? Have you ever thought about riding races? Where do you see things going?
Oh, well, I'm much too big to ride races, so that's definitely out of the question. I don't know. I really like what I'm doing now. I like being the assistant because I feel like I love the riding. And if I at some point get too old for that, I'll be pretty sad. But I love being an assistant because I feel like you have a lot of responsibility without everything being on you. I think I would like the work of training. I'm not sure if I'd like all the phone calls and the interviews and all of the rest of that. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm pretty happy where I am for right now.
You going to be glued to the TV to watch Clemson, Georgia this weekend?
Oh, I'm pretty excited. We're all Clemson folks are diehard football fans, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Katie Tolbert, this week's unsung hero, the segment presented by Claiborne. She is working with Brad Cox, doing wonderful work, including with Champion Essential Quality and so many other horses, and there are plenty of good ones in that barn right now.
Katie, listen, a lot of really nice ones.
Yeah, appreciate the visit. It's been wonderful to hear your story, and again, congratulations on being named this week's unsung hero. Keep it rolling.
Thank you so much.
All right, Katie Tolbert, unsung hero, and I'll be back in 30 seconds right after this word from Claiborne.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
If you know someone you feel deserves to be named an unsung hero and be recognized in those segments, please send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and nominate your unsung hero today. I will do my best to recognize them on these segments in the weeks and the months ahead. It's mike@horseracingradio.net, and look forward to hearing their stories. I'll be back to visit with Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher right after this on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Betmakers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border Report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. In this week's edition, I tell you the story of a horse racing life well lived, and one that many are grateful to have been part of. Frank Courtney's career, one that reached the finish line recently on a picture-perfect day at Woodbine, spanned 7 decades and spawned a multitude of roles, both on and off the racetrack. His most recent job, that of horseman's bookkeeper, was held for 32 years, and few, if any, have been able to view the world of thoroughbred racing through such a unique lens, something Courtney is humbly grateful to have experienced, saying, quote, "I've been in racing all my life. My father trained horses and rode. My uncles also rode. It's been in my blood since I was born," end quote. But the story of Frank Courtney begins even before he arrived into the world. On September 4th, 1952, his mother was at the races at Dufferin Park when she started having labor pains. Back then, women would go home to give birth to their children, so on the advice of a few owners and trainers, Courtney's mother returned home and at 6 p.m. gave birth to a baby boy who was almost born at the racetrack. His racetrack life began in the early 1960s when he walked hots for trainer Andy Smithers. Not surprisingly, Courtney, who spent time as an exercise rider, has no shortage of racing tales to share. How he got and kept the clerk of scales role at Woodbine is one that stands out. Frank was working in the jocks room in 1976. The clerk of scales at the time was Robert Davey, and he was the gentleman that taught Frank everything in the jocks room. A couple years later, Frank became his assistant, and when he retired, he made sure the job was given to Frank, even though he was only about 27 years old. And although some in senior management were concerned about the move, Frank recalls the sage advice given to him by his mentor. He said to me, "Frank, I'm giving you the opportunity to be the clerk of scales. It's up to you to either keep the job or lose the job. It's your job, a good job, and you're going to have to do everything that I taught you. Don't let your friends intimidate you." Luckily, the ones Frank had been closest to were probably the best to work with. Courtney also worked closely with some of the sport's top trainers and top horses, never taking any of those interactions or lessons learned for granted. Friends and horsemen are quick to point out the profound impact Courtney has had on thoroughbred racing in Canada. It has truly been a racing life well lived. Enjoy retirement, Frank. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Training horses is tough on the family life. My wife, Tracy, Peyton, Kyle, and Hannah, we've sacrificed a lot. I've missed a lot of soccer games and school nights. But one of the cool things about being a horse trainer is pretty much every day can be bring your kid to work day, and we've shared a lot of great moments too. I thank you for all your support. And I want to close out by stealing a line from one of my longest supporters, one of my favorite supporters. And Cot Campbell used to always close out with these words. And it's not going to sound nearly as cool coming from me, because he was a cool guy. But most of all, I want to thank the horses, the horses, and the horses. Thank you.
That's an emotional Todd Pletcher being inducted into the Hall of Fame in Saratoga Springs, New York, just a few weeks ago. And it was a wonderful moment for him, for his family. There have been plenty of those in the career of Todd Pletcher, but this was the ultimate, the pinnacle. And he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, good morning.
Morning.
Appreciate the visit. You know, you ended that speech talking about the horses, the horses, the horses, and there have been so many good ones. Man, do you ever just wake up and pinch yourself and say, gosh, what have I done to deserve this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I guess moments like the Hall of Fame and, you know, some milestones along the way that you know, you try to take a moment to just take it all in and enjoy it. And, you know, it's so hard to do in this business because literally every day is a new day and a new challenge. And, you know, you win one race and then you come back trying to figure out how to do it again. So there's not a lot of time to fully take it in like you should. But, you know, in some of these moments, you try to just, you know, take it all, soak it all in and you know, just try to appreciate how fortunate we've been.
You look at your resume, you see 5,170 plus wins to your credit. And I was a little bit surprised to learn that last year was your first win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup with Happy Saver, who's back to defend his title again later today. Boy,
well, I kind of thought you asterisk by that. I still count Vino Rosso as a win.
Yeah.
But no, it was that was a race that had really been elusive, and so yeah, I was kidding with someone. I said, yeah, now that it's during the pandemic year and the purse was $250,000, we were able to win it. But it was still a cool achievement for Happy Saver to be able to do that. And, you know, he'd gotten such a late start and to get there that quickly, to go from a maiden to an allowance to the Tessio to the Jockey Club, it's pretty hard for any horse to develop that quickly.
Yeah, he didn't debut until late June of his 3-year-old season last year, right?
Right. And so to do that and then come back and win an allowance race and the Jockey Club, you know, from a June maiden is that's hard to do.
You don't get to where you are without being patient with horses. Has Happy Saver maybe been one that's tested your patience a little bit?
Yeah, he has a little bit. You know, he had a setback right before he was ready to make his debut in the fall of his 2-year-old year, and so that's what set him back until June of his 3-year-old year. And you know, and then we had a decision to make after the Jockey Club, and we felt like, you know, he'd come so far so quickly that he probably wasn't ready for Breeders' Cup Classic, and sort of with that target off the table, we felt like giving him some time and let him develop and hopefully come back and have a, you know, productive season for us. This year was the right move, and he's matured nicely and looks well. So we're hoping that, you know, hopefully this Jockey Club would propel him forward to the Breeders' Cup Classic.
He's going to get a rematch with the horse that defeated him last time out in the Grade 2 Suburban at Belmont. That's Max Player. Look back on that race. Share your thoughts on his performance that day.
Well, you know, when he won the Jockey Club, he drew post one. That's a big advantage when you're running a mile and a quarter with that awkward start they have in the turn at Belmont for the mile and a quarter races. So, unfortunately, this year in the Suburban, he drew 6 of 6. And he just never was able to really save any ground. He was just sort of parked out in the middle of the track the whole way. And I thought, despite that and only being his second start of the year, he kept digging in. He kept finding more. He was able to get up for third. Actually, if you look at the speed figures in a lot of categories, it was his fastest race. But a lot of that was just contributed to the amount of ground he lost. And so I think he'll appreciate getting back to a true two-turn mile and a quarter race here, and hopefully he's ready to make another move forward.
You like the Gold Cup being run at Saratoga?
You know, it seems weird because historically you just associate the Jockey Club Gold Cup with Belmont Park, but what I do like about it is I think the mile and a quarter is a more fairly run race at Saratoga than it is at Belmont, just because, like I said, where they start the race.
Yeah, you know, when the decision was made to shift the race from Belmont over to Saratoga this year, Martin Panza was quoted as saying that more and more trainers are choosing not to run their better horses that close to the Breeders' Cup, meaning when the race was run at Belmont, which would have been, in a couple of weeks, I guess. Over the past 6 years, the average field size for the Jockey Club Gold Cup has been 6. Well, we moved to Saratoga on Labor Day weekend, and we have a 6-horse field.
Six.
Yeah, why? Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, there's just, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. And secondly, you know, everyone's trying to carefully map out the best way to get to the Breeders' Cup. And so every year is going to be a little different. You know, with Vino Rosso's case, he ran in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and it brought him forward perfectly for the Breeders' Cup. And then other times you might have horses that need a little more time in between races. So, you know, I think it just kind of depends on what everyone's looking at and how they're trying to get to the Breeders' Cup. And so sometimes it's just really hard to compare, you know, statistics from one year to the next, because, you know, I could say, oh man, I wish the Jockey Club was at, you know, at Belmont in October this year. And then things just don't work out for a certain horse, and it doesn't matter. So every year is a little different, but I think, you know, the trend that you've started to see in a lot of cases, people trying to have their final prep before the Breeders' Cup a little further out than, you know, what used to be the 3 or 4 weeks.
Happy Saver, not the only horse you will saddle on the Saturday program. You also have Never Surprised in the Saranac for Mike Rapoli, who introduced you. By the way, fantastic introduction. I was surprised. Well, I wasn't surprised at how long his introduction was, but he did a fantastic job introducing you at the Hall of Fame ceremonies.
Yeah, actually, I thought the over-under was 30 minutes, and I think he was approaching that. So some people said mine was too short, but I had to try to offset Mike's.
Did you find yourself crossing things out as he kept going?
Right.
Crossing things off your list you were going to say. Tell me about Never Surprised.
He's a colt that's taken to the turf quite well. He's pretty handy. He's got tactical speed, and coming in off a bit of a layoff, which is always a concern. But, I think in his case, he should be sharp off the layoff. And the one thing I think we probably had the wrong tactics last time. I think he's a free running horse, and you just got to let him do his thing. So that's what we'll try to do.
You have another good one too in Malathot, who won the Alabama last time out, looked really good doing it, got some redemption after being beaten in the Coaching Club American Oaks. Look back on that performance for a minute, Todd.
Yeah. I mean, we consider it to be a special filly, and we felt so badly for her for losing the Coaching Club. And I felt like we probably employed the wrong tactics that day and overthought strategy a little bit, but so it was great to get her back, draw a good post, and get in a race with a kind of a honest pace. And she stumbled slightly at the start, and that concerned me a little bit, but from there she was just, overpowered them and really finished the way we would have expected her to at a mile order. We always felt like that would suit her really well. And yeah, she's just a pleasure to train. She's all class and talented, and just the whole package. We're blessed to have her.
Did I read where the plan is now to train her up to the Breeders' Cup?
I think that's the most likely scenario. Rick Nichols and I spoke about it, you know, even before we decided to go the Coaching Club Alabama route. Coming into the Breeders' Cup fresh is the way we're probably going to approach it.
Trainer Todd Pletcher here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, I know it's busy time for you. I'll let you go. Really appreciate the visit. All the best with Malathot and with Happy Saver and all the horses that you're going to be running in the weeks and the months ahead. Good luck.
Thanks so much.
I'd appreciate it. Todd Pletcher here on HRRN, all class. And, just fantastic. So great to see Todd in the Hall of Fame. Well-deserved. It was kind of a no-brainer. But it's great to see him in there and officially have that plaque in Saratoga Springs. And looking forward to seeing Happy Saver strut his stuff later today. We'll see if he can do it. Todd said that, you know, he counts Vino Rosso as a win when he was disqualified, and code of honor for Shug McGee. He got the victory a couple of years ago. If that was the case, if Vino Rosso had won, then Todd would be looking for 3 in a row in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Instead, he'll try to go back-to-back with Happy Saver. I'll get to a break. I'll come back and take a peek at some historical dates in racing history, some anniversaries, if you will, and then I'll get you ready for hour number 3. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player. No matter the challenges I face every day in the NFL, my mom is always there for me, despite her own struggles with muscular dystrophy. And MDA is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is the leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today. Thank you.
Get to know the men and women who make this sport go on Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton. Mike Pena sits down with Hall of Famers, up-and-comers, and everyone in between with an intimate conversation that goes beyond the X's and O's. Hear their stories every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. It's the show that trainers listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton, only on HRRN.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you along with me on this Saturday morning. 2 hours down, one more to go. But before we get to hour number three, and I'll tell you what's ahead in hour three momentarily, it is time now, as we customarily do in this segment, to take a peek at some notable dates, anniversaries in racing history, and a belated happy anniversary to Johnny V. Yesterday, September 3rd, 2001, was the day that John Velasquez became the first jockey in history to ride six winners on a single card at Saratoga. I'll never forget that day. It was pretty special. It was on this day, September 4th, 1920, that Man of War won the mile and five-eighths mile Lawrence Realization Stakes at Belmont by, how about this? You're not going to believe it. 100 lengths. 100. That's the largest winning margin in modern racing history. No shocker there. His time for the race, 2:40 and 4/5, shattered the world record by 6 and 4/5 seconds and was the fifth record-setting performance of that year. His fifth record-setting performance of the year. September 4th, 1959, Alaire DuPont's two-year-old Kelso won his maiden race by 1 1/4 lengths at Atlantic City. Who can imagine what would come after that? In the following year, Kelso was voted the first of his record five consecutive Horse of the Year titles. Just incredible. And a horse that won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. What was it? Five? 5 years in a row for Kelso? Pretty special. All those notable dates in racing history, always fun to look back on those and, And I remember that day in 2001 with Johnny V when he rattled off six wins on the program. It was, you know, and I've talked to jockeys about that from time to time. We talk about jockeys being in the zone, like a hitter in baseball, for example, or a quarterback where the game just slows down and they start seeing everything so clearly. Same thing for Johnny V. He just was in the zone. And jockeys will tell you, they do. They get locked in. They see the hole. They make the right move. Their hands feel good. They get into this zone, and it feels like you can't do anything wrong. It's a pretty special feeling, and pretty cool to look back on that in that particular segment. All right, 2 hours down, one to go, and it is a jam-packed third hour, which begins with our weekly edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. That comes your way in just a few minutes. Sean sits down with veteran jockey Robbie Davis for a very entertaining, always unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. At 10:30, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, and I wrap up the show at 10:40 Eastern by going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with the voice of the Breeders' Cup himself, Larry Kolmus. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the program nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
On the outside, affirmed on the rail, it's Coastal between those two, spectacular bid. Those three now across the track, approaching the eighth pole. Affirmed once again draws clear by a length. On the inside, it's spectacular bid in second. Coastal is dropping back in third, past the 16th pole. Affirmed on the outside, takes this race. Horse of the year, affirmed in front.
And Curlin has taken the lead. It is Curlin now in front. Wandering Boy fights on. He's a half length behind in second. And then farther back, it's Merchant Marine third. And here he is, Curlin, under the wire, beyond cigar, and into the records books.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
One furlong to go. Stay thirsty. Stay thirsty still there. But here comes Flat Out. Flat Out on the outside. And Stay Thirsty, who's hanging on bravely. Stay Thirsty down inside. And Flat Out, who comes with the last gasp lunge. 2-1. Flat Out got it by a flared nostril.
They still have to catch Diversify, who's put to the whip. Diversify holding on to the lead. Keen Ice on the outside and Pavel trying to run him down. Diversify digs in. Keen Ice on the outside and Pavel can't get him. Diversify has won the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number three of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron in the Backstretch. Continuing on, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, happy to have you sticking along with me. I started the show by asking you if I'm the only one who thinks it's really strange to say happy Jockey Club Gold Cup Day on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. And Todd Pletcher was with me in that last segment, and I asked Todd that question, if it seems strange to be talking about the Jockey Club Gold Cup. I asked him if he liked the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga. And he used the word weird. And it does seem weird. It's been tied to Belmont Park for so long, pretty much since I've been born. There were a few years early on. I was born in 71. The race was run at Aqueduct from 69 to 74. It was also run at Aqueduct from 58 to 61 and 63 to 67. So there is precedent to shift the Belmont from Elmont, New York, to upstate New York or to another racetrack. But it does seem really strange to be talking about the Jockey Club Gold Cup being run at someplace other than Belmont Park. And as I pointed out to Todd, when the race was moved, Martin Panza at NYRA said, well, horsemen are becoming more and more reluctant to run their horses in these races so close to the Breeders' Cup. And the average field size over the past several years in the Jockey Club Gold Cup has been small. It's been six. So they move it to Saratoga. They move it back to Labor Day weekend. They think they're going to get a big field. They have six. There are six horses in today's Jockey Club Gold Cup. Todd will send out the defending champion, Happy Saver, who is attempting to become, by the way, the 11th horse to win back-to-back runnings of the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He'll join Hall of Famers Nashua Shuvi, Slew of Gold, Skipaway, and Curlin, if he can do it. The most recent horse to win back-to-back runnings, Tonalist, in 2014 and 2015. So that's what Happy Saver has ahead of him later today. It's a fantastic card in Saratoga, by the way. 12 races, 4 graded stakes. Acacia Courtney joined me earlier in the program to walk through those graded stakes. Did a fantastic job pointing out some of the main players and contenders. You can go back and listen to the replay after I finish up here at 11 a.m. Eastern and check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. Poll question today. This is presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Who wins today's Jockey Club Gold Cup? Going to keep it simple. Happy Saver, Max Player, the horse that beat him last time out, Forza D'Oro, or Other. If you click Other, you have to give me the name of one of the other three horses you think is going to win it, other than Happy Saver, Max Player, and Forza D'Oro. I asked Acacia to share her thoughts, on that poll question, and she went with Forza D'Oro. That would be a little bit of an upset. Not a huge upset, but it would be a little bit of an upset if Forza D'Oro could win for Hall of Famer Bill Mott. You also heard from Barry Pearl in the first hour of the program talking about Jockeys and Jeans and the event that they are holding at Monmouth next Saturday to benefit the PDJF. You heard from Chauncey Morris, who was fantastic, talking about the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund and the benefits it has provided to racing at Kentucky Downs and to racetracks and the circuit in general here in Kentucky. He also talked about the impact it has had on owners and breeders and on the sales side of things. That interview available on our website, horseracingradio.net, after I finish up here this morning. Unsung heroes, I welcome Katie Tolbert, the exercise rider for Brad Cox. She's been working with him since the spring, but she works with his champion, Essential Quality, among other outstanding horses. That was a really, really fun segment with Katie Tolbert in hour number two. All right, hour number three, I told you, In the Room with Sean Clancy kicks it off. That comes your way momentarily. He sits down one-on-one with Robbie Davis. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History coming up at 10:25 and Road to the Breeders' Cup. I go down that road with NBC announcer and Breeders' Cup announcer Larry Colmus, as he does call the Breeders' Cup on NBC. And we'll have a nice chat coming up at 10:40 Eastern time. So without further ado, it is time to get you to this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, one-on-one with Robbie Davis.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with retired jockey Robbie Davis here at Saratoga. What's it like training your own string here at Saratoga? Still at it. I'm still going around every morning.
Yeah, it's a job, I tell you. You know, it's an uphill battle here at Saratoga. You got to have the right stock, and we're kind of in between the right stock and Finger Lake stock. So, but we keep swinging.
You're here with your son Eddie Davis in a little barn, kind of behind the paddock. Your wife's here working. It's a family affair, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. It's what we do. You know, we have three kids, our jockeys, and Eddie started training. He wanted to claim horses, so I helped him get a couple owners, and he's doing a good job with that. And I just couldn't put myself up to claiming horses for guys that I'd rode for 20 years and owners and stuff. So plus my son rides, and it just don't look good. So but Eddie's doing a good job with it, and rightfully so.
Ever try to talk any of these kids out of getting in the horse business, or are you talking them into it?
Oh, it's funny. I directed them all to school, and I directed them away from it. And they all end up coming. As soon as the last one graduated high school, I started training. That was Dylan. And he didn't know what he was going to do. And he decided he wanted to be a jockey after the last day of the meet on Labor Day. And so I went home and I said, now, Dylan, you know, this takes a commitment of 5 years. You know, you just don't become a jockey overnight. I mean, I know you race these dirt bikes and everything, but you got to do the right thing. I'm going to send you over to Chris McCarron's jockey school. So we went upstairs and put my boots on, old boots and old pants and some silks and a helmet. And I'll be damned, it fit just perfect. And so he says, well, Dad, how do I look? I said, you look great, but let's get the saddle out. We're going to tack up the pony out here in the paddock. And, well, Dad, you know, I don't know. I said, just get on. Let's see how you feel in these silks on this saddle, this little jock saddle. And we legged him up and had a couple of friends hanging around watching. It was like, Rob, are you sure? Are you sure? And he's leaning like he's on a dirt bike trying to turn left and right. I was like, no, Dylan, you got to use the reins to turn. You know, and then the horse went into the running shed, and we're all standing there like, oh, no, oh, no. And then he came out, and he was still on. We're like, yeah! And we were all surprised. So we called McCarron, and Chris, I said, Chris, you got another one to leg up over here. I says, I can't get them out of bed and fight with them, with their friends and everything over here. You got to do it. So he put him in the school, and at Christmas time, he said, Rob, he's good. He's good. He's going to be a good one. He only needs to come here for 1 year because he's very advanced. And then Wesley Ward took him under his wing and took him to Keeneland, won some races in Canada, and then he rode for him in Florida. He was the fourth leading rider in Florida. And, you know, and the rest is history. So I'm really proud of him, really proud of him. It's great for him to come to his hometown of Saratoga and with his friends, and gives him a lot of bragging rights, you know, when we go out to dinner. So I get free cups of coffee everywhere I go. So it's great.
Yeah, there's some perks, right?
Yeah, there is. They don't remember who I am. Robbie who? What? Oh, you know Dylan? I said, yeah, I know Dylan. I know him. Oh, man, let me buy you a cup of coffee.
Well, the first year, I remember seeing a kid walk across Nelson Avenue on a horse of Wesley Ward's, and I looked up and I said, "That's Robbie Davis. That's a young Robbie Davis." And I kind of walked over there and realized it was Dylan. Can you see the similarities of your style with his?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it's uncanny how it passed on. I mean, we're exact same size, and he sits there and saves ground, and you know he. He wins the race on the third and fourth best horse all the time. And he's a natural. And Jackie's a natural, and so was Katie. But funny story was Dylan was come back out of the jockey school, and he was getting ready to ride. He had 5 wins to make before he started the bug. And Jackie'd won 2 or 3 races at Aqueduct. And we're on the horse path, and everybody's like, oh, congratulations, Jackie. But it was Dylan. So Dylan come into Barney's crying. And he's like, Dad, I'm not going back out there. I said, what's the problem? What happened? They think I'm Jackie. I said, oh, well, just give him the finger. Just give him the finger. That's what Jackie would do. And he starts, no, he can't do that. And I said, well, then put some eyeliner on and smile at him, you know. Well, they look identical with helmets on, you know. But, yeah, Dylan rides a good race, and he don't need the best horse to win, which is really a plus for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, do you watch your kids ride as a father, or do you watch as a jockey?
Well, at first it took me a while because I was the father, and I would run in the bathroom. I didn't know if I was going to take a crap or throw up, and I'd come back out and Jackie'd be in front, and I'd be like, oh, I'd have to push rewind and see how the hell she done that, because she'd scared the daylights out of me. And then finally I just put it in her hands, in God's hands, because I couldn't watch. But my son, I watch him and I help him, and he also has Mike Migliori, which is Richie Migliori's brother. And so it's a tag team that we do with Dylan, that we help him a little bit, and it's really paid off.
that must be great pride for you to watch your kids. And you have a son-in-law, Trevor McCarthy, as well. So you basically have four kids riding races.
Yeah, I mean, when we go home and that TV goes on and the races, we're jumping from Maryland to Aqueduct to Belmont, you know, to Del Mar or Santa Anita. And then Jackie was riding at night at Penn National. So we really couldn't put the fork down. We just kept whipping all the way all of the afternoon. And just like she went two or three a day with us. And, it's exciting. It really keeps it fun.
Take us back to the beginning. You grew up in Idaho, and riding came naturally then. I mean, you kind of riding as a kid, or what was that like?
I started out on dirt bikes on my uncle's gas tank, and he'd give me rides through the mountains, and I'd hang on to that dirt bike and the handlebars, and I raced dirt bikes, and then I raced cars, and drag race cars on Saturday, raced dirt bikes on Sunday, and I couldn't make much money at either one of them. My little trophy and kind of get a little banged up every weekend, you know, and my friend had a brand new truck, a brand new trailer house, a great big belt buckle, and a tall blonde. And I said, man, this is for me. I said, this guy's doing good. I said, I come home and told my uncle I wanted to be a jockey. I said, he got a brand new truck and everything over here. He said, well, go where you can make some money. If you're going to climb on their back, go to New York, go to California, go where you can really, you know, make a living at it and do well. You can always come back to Idaho and ride quarter horses. So I sailed out of there with 43 tickets, a suspended license. I swapped the license plates of my Aunt Bonnie's Volkswagen, and away I went. I went to New York on fictitious plates, no insurance, and no license. But I didn't turn my license in because in case I'd gotten pulled over, I had a license to show them, and it wasn't valid, but it was something to show them. So, and then I won my first race on Comanche Brave, Dominic Del Vecchio. One of the hardest prayers I ever prayed when I come onto Belmont Park, I pulled 6 pounds in the hot box, and I was seeing spots all through the infield. And I was like, God, I know I've asked you for many things, but if you could just let me win this one race, I could tell all my friends I want to race in New York and go back home, you know, with some real bragging rights. And I won that first race, and I won three that week. So I'd gotten my check, and it was $3,800. And I said, wow, they made a big mistake here. I said, man, maybe I could skip town and get home. I can get home on this. And my valet, I said, listen, I got dressed, and I thought better of it. I said, I'll get arrested. You know, they'll have me arrested before I get to the Mississippi. I told my valet, I said, listen, they made a mistake on my check. And he's like, well, let me see it. And he folded it out and looking at it. He says, well, it's all there. I said, no, I only won three races. He goes, oh, well, welcome to the Big Apple, Jock. I was like, wow, I kind of like this. This is great because we got $16 to ride and $26 to win in Idaho. Here I got $3,800, you know, in my pocket. And, man, I was rich. But, yeah, and it went from there. And we came to Saratoga that first year in 82, and I fell in love with Saratoga Springs. It was just like Idaho, and the mountains and the lakes and the best horse racing in the world. I said, this is where I want to live. And we raised our family here. That's a great spot, the best horse racing in the world, greatest game outdoors.
No doubt. Highlight of your riding career was a Wagon Limit or Arlington Million what stands out?
You know, a Wagon Limit was the best. He was 30-1. The chief comes out with a suit and tie on and a hat. And he had that kind of high-pitched voice, you know. And I read the form. I'm 30-1. There's lots of speed. He says, well, Jock, what are you going to do? He's asking me, what am I going to do? And I said, well, Chief, let's just sit off the speed a little bit and make a little run, get a check. Yeah, that sounds good. We'll get a check. Just sit back there and make one run. Get it. That sounds great. It's a million-dollar race, you know. So I looked up down the backside. I was 20 lengths back, and I'm counting the horses, and I'm about seventh or eighth. And so I asked the horse just a little bit, and the horse just gave me the finger, and he says, no, this is a five. He said, we ain't making a move from the 5/8 pole. And I'm going, oh, I'm dead. So I got to the half-mile pole. I passed two. So I says, oh, good, I'm going to be fifth. And I got to the 3/8 pole. I said, oh, good, I'm going to be fourth. And I turned for home. There was two in front of me, and they collapsed at the 8th pole. And I said, oh, he's going to like this. This is going to be great. And we won the darn thing, and I come back and said, how's that for a check, Chief? Oh, he started crying, had tears coming down his eyes, and Mr. Shields and his wife there. It was the greatest feeling ever. I can just put it in a jar, you know, and save it. It was so much fun. It was a highlight. It was a real highlight. Didn't do it for him, you know, was even so much better because he would scream and yell at you for a cheap claiming race, you know. If you weren't digging in, he'd come back and say, you're getting a little long in the tooth. I said, put me back on that, son of a gun. I'll show you. What? You ride him this time? And I was just kind of protecting. He wasn't traveling so great, you know. And so put him back on, and we win. And but he had his thumb on the pulse, and there's some good horsemen here that do, and it's fun to be around them and watch my kids be able to ride for them, and it's exciting.
Yeah, it's an amazing journey. Get out of Idaho and make it in New York.
Yeah, well, you know, last weekend our son got married in the Hamptons, and I'm sitting there. I'm going, well, I went from the trailer park on welfare to the Hamptons in New York to raise my son, and you know, I named this one Robbie Jr. And you tend to want to spend a little more time with ones you name after yourself. You don't want them to open up the first page of the paper and see them in the police log, you know, your name or something, you know. So he was reading by the time he was three, you know. And he went to Drexel and graduated at Drexel University. And we're just so proud of him. And we're proud of all of our kids, you know. They haven't been on the second page of the newspaper yet, knock wood, but we came. It was a long travel, you know, and my wife and I had a lot of fun times raising these kids. And, you know, it takes a good woman to back you and support you and moving around and working every weekend. And that's a hard life, you know. You got to work every weekend, and you sacrifice. And I went to the school PTA meeting, and I said, Mr. Davis, everything's fine, but we got a big problem here. And I said, well, what's that? He says, well, your kids have missed 11 Tuesdays in a row. And I said, oh, yeah, that's true. She says, well, what are we going to do about it? I said, well, ma'am, she was a nun, you know. And I said, ma'am, I put my neck on the line every day, 9 times a day. And when I come home, I say my prayers and my blessings. And every Saturday and Sunday, I miss the ball games. I miss the cheerleading, the wrestling, and the soccer games. But when Tuesday comes, I don't have the heart to take these kids and drop them off at the school. And so I hook up the fishing boat, and we go to the other direction and pack a little lunch, and we go out on the water, or we do something to the bowling alley, or we go do something. Well, Mr. Davis, that's so great of you. She says, you continue to do what you're doing, and just be sure they do their homework on Tuesday, you know. So I said, no problem. So we work around a little bit. It was great.
Wow, that's the epitome of raising kids on the racetrack, right?
Yeah.
The question of the day, the Fanticipate question of the day, who was your biggest fan when you were riding races?
Oh, my mother. Yeah, my mom, bless her heart. She died a year ago yesterday on the 1st of September, and I'd fly her all over the country, Chicago and Del Mar, and she got to meet Tim Conway, and she was just the backbone of the family. And she was all 4'8" and just full of vinegar and honey, you know. You didn't want to rub her wrong, but she was so much fun. And she always told me, she said, don't let nobody tell you you can't do it. And if they don't believe in you, tell them to sit back and watch, because you're going to show them. And she was fabulous. You know, we really miss her.
That's Robbie Davis. He showed them.
Wow, what a fun visit. My thanks to Sean Clancy and to Robbie Davis for taking time to be so candid there in that conversation. Just outstanding. That's why this is the best racing radio show on the airwaves right now. Stuff like that. That kind of stuff that Sean draws out of those jockeys is so incredible. And Robbie was fantastic. And really, my thanks to both of them for helping to put that together. My thanks to My Racehorse and Fanticipate for being part of this as sponsors. I'm going to be back right after a word from each of them.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
And this show gets even better next Saturday morning as we create a brand new segment. It will be basically the final 30 minutes of the program. Every day, every Saturday morning at 10:30 Eastern, I ask, they answer. It's that simple. I will do that with Dale Romans, and I will do that with longtime turf writer Tim Wilkin. They are good friends. They are both opinionated, and they can play off of each other, and it is going to be fantastic. Next Saturday, the debut of I Ask, They Answer at 10:30 Eastern. Make sure you're tuned into that. You will not want to miss it. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformers Air Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're beginning to bunch behind the leader as Summing leads into the stretch by about two lengths. On the outside, it is Silver Buck with John Henry gaining ground gradually on Summing as they hit the top of the stretch. The mile and a quarter in 2:02 and one, a tremendous pace as they hit the stretch. Summings still has a lead by a head, but Shoemaker now sends John Henry on the outside. John Henry has taken the lead. Summing back into second, gaining ground on the outside. Silverbuck and the mare relaxing. Relaxing now takes second. Silverbuck is third, and Pete Moss, the long shot, is gaining ground. John Henry, Pete Moss now a race to the wire. John Henry on the inside is Pete Moss.
How about that look back at the 1981 Jockey Club Gold Cup and the great John Henry. What a legend he was. Man, what a race that was, too. John Henry certainly playing his part in horse racing history. And I'm going to get you to Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history momentarily, but I do want to remind you that the Claiming Crown is now open for nominations. You can nominate your horses to the December 4th Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park, the Breeders' Cup for the blue-collar horses, as I like to call it, by going to claimingcrown.com. It is presented by a partnership of the National HPPA, TOBA, the Florida HPPA, and Gulfstream Park. They do an amazing job. It's a wonderful day of thoroughbred racing. You can contact Eric Hamelback, who is the CEO of the National HPPA, at their offices as well. Learn more on Twitter at National HPPA or by going to their website, hbpa.org. Nominate today to the 2021 Claiming Crown, December 4th at Gulfstream Park. All right, well, time now to turn it over to my good friend Kurt Becker for this week's stroll through racing history.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was a horse with a blue-blooded pedigree owned by an aristocratic family. He won the Hopeful at Saratoga at 2, disappointed in the Kentucky Derby the following spring, but came roaring back to be a two-time handicap champion as an older horse. His name was Devil Diver. Foaled on March 11, 1939 at Green Tree Farm in Lexington, Kentucky, Devil Diver was a homebred who raced in the pink and black silks of the Green Tree stable of Helen Hay Whitney. As the widow of Payne Whitney and the granddaughter of a Cleveland railroad tycoon, Helen Whitney was a person of considerable wealth. She was also someone of keen intelligence and business sense, having maintained her husband's racing stable long after his passing in 1927. When Devil Diver was born, Helen had every reason to be optimistic. The colt represented fourth-generation Whitney family breeding on the dam side of his pedigree. He was by the Whitney Stallion St. Germans from a homebred mare named Dabchick. Helen chose the name Devil Diver for the foal because a Dabchick and a Devil Diver are both birds closely related to the loon. The only issue with Devil Diver was that he had what journalists described as a malformed right front foot. The inside quarter of the hoof was flat instead of concave, meaning the heel would be virtually unprotected when he ran. Green Tree trainer John Gaver Sr., a Princeton graduate and former bank clerk, took charge of the colt, as well as another Whitney homebred whose name was Shutout. Both showed considerable promise as juveniles, but hardly anyone could decide which was the better of the two. As a juvenile in 1941, Devil Diver was runner-up in his first three starts before breaking his maiden at Saratoga. He then won the Sanford Stakes, followed by the Hopeful. But folks still couldn't decide if he was the best two-year-old in the Green Tree barn. After all, Shutout had been runner-up in the Hopeful, and more Whitney horses had finished third and fourth that day in a dominating performance. The following spring, in April of 1942, Devil Diver won the Phoenix Handicap at 6.5 furlongs under jockey Eddie Arcaro at Keeneland by a head over reigning Triple Crown champion Whirlaway. The performance caused many observers to move Devil Diver to the head of the three-year-old crop. Later that month, Devil Diver and stablemate Shutout were both scheduled to run in the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland. Shutout romped home by 5 lengths, while Devil Diver never left his stall. The colt had been frightened the night before the race by an automobile horn and had injured himself, forcing his withdrawal from the event. On the day of the Kentucky Derby, Shutout and Devil Diver were both in the lineup and were coupled as a Green Tree entry. The general perception was that, despite his recent mishap, Devil Diver was the stronger of the two. The cover of a prominent racing magazine even sported a photo of Shutout with the caption, "Green Tree's second string." Jockey Eddie Arcaro had his pick of either horse. He deliberated all throughout Derby week before choosing Devil Diver. As it happened, the winner of the Run for the Roses was shut out under jockey Wayne Wright. Arcaro and Devil Diver finished sixth. To this day, racing historians point to the situation as an example of a jockey choosing the quote-unquote wrong horse for the Derby. But in fairness to Arcaro, Devil Diver was headed for an illustrious career even if he didn't win the Kentucky Derby. In 1943, Devil Diver won the Carter, Toboggan, Metropolitan, and Brooklyn handicaps, beating Shutout in each of the last three. In 1944, he again beat Shutout in the Toboggan while carrying 134 pounds. He won the Metropolitan at 134, the Pominock at 130, and the American Legion handicap under 136 pounds. He would capture back-to-back awards as the nation's top handicap horse as a result of those efforts. In 1945, Devil Diver won the Metropolitan for the third consecutive year. It's a feat that has never been equaled before or since. Devil Diver was retired from racing on August 1, 1945, with a record of 22 wins in 47 starts and $261,000 in earnings. He had won at distances ranging from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, and he ranked number 15 on the all-time earnings list. Devil Diver was retired to stud at Green Tree in Lexington, where he stood his first season for $750. A stallion who met with only moderate success, Devil Diver moved to the Stallion Station in Lexington in 1953, and that was where he died on November 16, 1961. Devil Diver was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame a number of years later in 1980. We remember Devil Diver, who 80 years ago this summer won the Hopeful Stakes at Saratoga. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another fantastic story, and if you missed any of those Kurt Becker Stroll Through Racing History segments, you can spend a while listening to them on our website, horseracingradio.net. If you go there, you click on the Shows tab at the very top of the page. You can listen to every single one of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing Histories and Sean Clancy's In the Room segments. Do yourself a favor and spend some time one day. If you're not doing anything, flip back through. If you're going to be taking a long drive, Bluetooth us in your car and listen. You can also listen to all of our shows via replay and podcast there on our website, horseracingradio.net. But my thanks to Kurt, to Lane's End, and to Keeneland for helping to make that segment possible each and every week. I'm going to get to another break. One final segment coming your way, and it's a good one. The voice of racing on NBC, Larry Colmus, joins me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
A five-time Graded Stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Ironicus. This Graded Stakes winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners. A Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga. He won three Graded Stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. Top runners include graded stakes winner Helium.
Repels the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort.
The leading money earner at stud for emerging sire of sires distorted humor, Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Arrowgate's going to take the far outside route. He's coming up on the outside of Gunavera, but he's a long way behind Gunrunner and Collected as they make their way to the top of the stretch in the Breeders' Cup Classic. They're into the stretch, and it's Collected and Gunrunner. They've been battling since the gates opened. Gunrunner's got the lead. Collected West Coast is bearing down on them on the outside. Final 16th. Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collected's alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic over Collected. Then came West Coast, followed by War Story. Arrowgate was coming late, but too late. The final time was 2 minutes 1.29 seconds.
Is there anybody better? Talking about Gunrunner, talking about the voice of racing on NBC, the voice of the Breeders' Cup, Larry Colmus. Fantastic call, fantastic moment. The last time the Breeders' Cup, the only time the Breeders' Cup has been run at Del Mar. It returns where the turf meets the surf, November 5th and 6th. And in case you're wondering, that's just 62 days, 3 hours, 10 minutes away. And that means it's time now to welcome the announcer, Larry Colmus, as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Larry, thanks for the visit, my friend. How pumped up are you to get back to Southern California?
I'm really pumped up. I can't wait to be at Del Mar. I had a chance to visit there just a couple of weeks ago and do a little work at Del Mar for TVG, and it was great to see everybody after calling the races there the year before. And, man, what a beautiful place right by the Pacific Ocean. And if you've never been, you just have to go. It's awesome.
I remember when the Breeders' Cup decided to go there in 2017, and there was so much talk about the fact that it was such a small venue and how could Breeders' Cup do this? They're not going to be able to have the crowd. They're not going to. And there were so many people that were naysayers going into that event. But the racing turned out to be fantastic, as it always is at the Breeders' Cup. And the Breeders' Cup staff pulled it off. It went without a hitch.
Yeah, it went really well. Between the Breeders' Cup staff and the Del Mar staff, they did an absolutely amazing job. And I remember being out on the roof calling those races. They actually had to build a booth for me right next to where Trevor Denman called the races for Del Mar. I was calling them for NBC, and they put together a perfect setup for me, and the whole atmosphere there was just great. And I remember getting in and out. Traffic wise wasn't bad. Everything went smooth. And I think with one under their belt, it'll be even better this time around.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. The same thing on our end with the coverage side of it. Everything was very smooth. It was made very easy by the team at Del Mar and the team at Breeders' Cup. And really excited to see the Breeders' Cup return there. And then, of course, it comes back to Keeneland. And you've had the privilege of being part of that event when it was here in Keeneland, too. These smaller tracks, they really do make for a very good fit for a championship day like the Breeders' Cup.
Absolutely. I mean, who could forget the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland when American Pharoah, after winning the Triple Crown, goes out the way he did with that win in the Breeders' Cup Classic? It was the perfect ending to a perfect day at Keeneland. And then we came back with an odd year last year at the Breeders' Cup with COVID going on. And Keeneland put on a great show for us, too. You know, it was obviously a very limited amount of people there because of COVID. But, man, it was special to be back at Keeneland. And those are two iconic venues for sure, Del Mar and Keeneland. The Breeders' Cup, they know what they're doing.
You have so many great memories of big-time horses you've called and big-time races that you've been part of as the announcer. Certainly the Kentucky Derby is at the top of the list, but you think about the Breeders' Cups that you've been part of. Do you have a couple races or calls or Breeders' Cup moments that have stood out to you and maybe a little bit more than some others over the years?
Well, for sure, American Pharoah, I was just saying, his Breeders' Cup Classic has got to be at the very top.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just such an iconic moment, and I had been through the whole year with him, so it made it that much more exciting. But another one that comes to mind was when Mucho Macho Man won the Breeders' Cup Classic, and the race was a lot closer than I thought it was. I had given him this definitive, maybe a little bit even over the top call of his victory in that race, and then I watched the first replay, and Will Take Charge had made that late bid on the outside, and watching it live, it didn't look close, and Gary Stevens even gave a little victory salute there when they hit the wire, and I watched the first replay, and I'm like, oh no, this is a lot closer than I thought. And then I watched it again, and I'm like, oh, did I just call the wrong winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic? You know, I was sweating bullets up there, and then Mucho Macho Man's number came up on the board, and there was this feeling of utter relief. And then I remember that night seeing Jay Privman at dinner, and he showed me the photo finish, and I almost got sick right there at the table, even though it was over. And I said I would never call a photo like that again in a big race. And then back at Santa Anita, Beholder and Songbird hit the wire together in the Breeders' Cup distaff, and I called Beholder the winner over Songbird, and that might have even been closer than Mucho Macho Man and Will Take Charge. So I wish I hadn't done it, because it probably knocked some years off my life, but luckily I was right in the end, so that was good. But there's so many, Mike. I mean, it's the Breeders' Cup. There's championship after championship at stake, and it just doesn't get any better.
Are you expecting to have the same setup at Del Mar this time around? And if so, is that a good vantage point to call a tight finish? Well, we know there will be one. Is it a good vantage point?
It's not ideal. It's a little bit before the finish line, and I don't know where else they could possibly put me. I think I'll probably be in that spot. It's perfectly fine. The viewing is great. But as far as calling a really tight photo, it's not as good as a place like Saratoga, where you know, you could really see when they hit the wire who won. But some of these places are a little skewed vantage wise. But Del Mar, it's not perfect for me, but it's good enough. And if it's too close to call, it's too close to call.
There are so many people that are listening right now, Larry, that will hear Larry Colmus and watch Larry Colmus on TV. They'll hear your voice. They'll hear you on the radio as part of our coverage team. And they don't realize all the work that goes in to preparing to call all of these different championship races. You do it day in and day out when you call races, but the Breeders' Cup, with so many horses that you haven't seen before, the ones that come from overseas, the ones from different racetracks, you have to memorize those silks. Take me through your preparation to get ready for the Breeders' Cup. When does it start? What does it entail?
Well, there's always some pre-preparation, and that is basically just paying attention to what's going on around the country and around the world, you know, who these horses are and what their stories are, and just start around this time, you really start paying attention, because the fields start to come together once Saratoga and Del Mar finish, and then you kind of get an idea of who might go. So get those thoughts about those top horses going. But then the real work comes about 2 weeks before the Breeders' Cup. It's actually right around the time that the pre-entries come out. And the folks at Breeders' Cup have been fantastic, including your wife, Michelle, who's been a godsend to me over the years, of sending me all these silks of the horses that are going to be running in the Breeders' Cup. And what I'll do is I'll get these colors, which are emailed to me, and I will start to make flashcards, putting the silks on one side and all the information on the horse that I want to know about on the other side. It's a long process, but it's well worth it. And I will quiz myself from the time the pre-entries come out to each day, at least 5 times, I would say. I'll look at every Breeders' Cup race just to get these horses in my head. And then when the time comes, on Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday, you should know who they are, but, you always keep studying as the day goes on. So it's a nonstop thing.
What's the bigger challenge for you, calling the Breeders' Cup or calling the Kentucky Derby?
I would say calling the Kentucky Derby because it's the Kentucky Derby and it's 20 horses and you only get one, once the Kentucky Derby's over, it's done, and you only get really one shot at it. The Breeders' Cup, I mean, there's 13 races? So, you have all these opportunities one after another. There's more races to study, but for the one race pressure, it's the Kentucky Derby.
Talking with Larry Colmus, the voice of racing on NBC. You hear him with the Triple Crown. You hear him with the Breeders' Cup. You'll hear him again this year in Del Mar, November 5th and 6th. We're going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Larry, before you get to that point, you're also going to be calling the six-day meet at Kentucky Downs. It's the FanDuel meet at Kentucky Downs, and really promises to be exciting. The purse money, as Chauncey Morris pointed out with me in the beginning of the program today, is just off the charts, ridiculously good. You're going to have so many outstanding horses there. And that particular racetrack presents a completely different type of challenge than a track like Del Mar.
Yeah, it sure does. It presents a challenge unlike any other track in the United States. It is a difficult place to call races. And the main reason for that is it's not your standard type of racetrack. It's a mile and 5/16 around. It's all turf. And there are all kinds of intricacies. There's points where they take right-hand turns. They're going uphill, downhill. They're going directly away from you. Plus, you have a lower vantage point. There's a lot that goes on when you try to put together a race call for Kentucky Downs. But the good part is the quality of racing is just amazing. The purses are outstanding. They're massive. And it's just fun to be a part of. It's a great atmosphere when you get there. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's only 6 days, but it's six action-packed, stakes-filled days.
I pointed out earlier in the show when Chauncey Morris did join me here, he, of course, with the KTA, KTOB, and the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, that race 11, the final race on Sunday's opening day program at Kentucky Downs, is a maiden special weight race with a purse of $135,000. Larry, that's a stakes purse.
It's crazy. I mean, that's the standard purse for a maiden special weight at Kentucky Downs, and the allowance races are like $150,000-something. And every seems like every stakes race is at least $400,000. You have a couple million-dollar races during the meet. The numbers are mind-boggling, and the field sizes, of course, are going to be huge. They're great betting races because of the amount of horses in each race. Because there's so much purse money, everybody wants to run.
As somebody who has never stood in that announcer's booth at Kentucky Downs, I've never laid eyes on the actual configuration from your vantage point. Talk about what it's like. Do the horses, do you lose them at some point when they go down the hill? How does it work when you're going through and calling the race?
Well, there really isn't an announcer's booth, to be honest with you. There's a location, I guess, where I call the races. It's outside, and it can get really hot, and the sun goes down, it kind of gets a little worse, but it's fun. As far as the sight lines, it's low, which means, it on the back stretch and on the turn, it's a little harder to see than if you had a higher perspective. However, and Saratoga is very similar to that height-wise, but because of that, you actually, when they come to the finish line, you've got a great view of calling the close finishes because you're almost, eye to eye with them when they come by you. But, there's just so much to that place that no other place has. You know, the one turn, the first turn is very tight, and the other one is just as sweeping as can be. So, there's downhill locations. I mean, there's just so much to Kentucky Downs that you don't see anywhere else. And especially for me, who hasn't been calling races since the Belmont Stakes, we've got to hope for the best. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, talk about jumping into the deep end right off the bat. But you're a pro. You can handle it. If anybody can, it's going to be you. Next Saturday, two Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races will be contested. You have the FanDuel Turf Sprint, the Calumet Turf Cup. Both of those are going to be televised on NBC. So you're back home with the folks at NBC. And really looking forward to those races, too. They really add an awful lot to that meet.
Yeah, there are so many great races at Kentucky Downs, and it's great to have NBC come and televise them. I'm sure it'll be a challenge for them just because of all the angles that they're not used to seeing. So I'll be looking forward to the NBC coverage and looking forward to those great races.
Well, the Breeders' Cup will be here before we know it. We are edging ever closer. We started the interview, and we were, I think, 62 days, 5 hours, and some odd minutes away. Now we're 62 days, 4 hours, 56 minutes. Get to work, Larry. Get to work.
I better start studying right now.
Listen, man, looking forward to hearing your calls at Kentucky Downs. Always a delight, and have a great meet, and we'll catch up again before the Breeders' Cup for sure.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That's Larry Colmus, the voice of racing on NBC and the voice of the Breeders' Cup, taking you down the road to the Breeders' Cup on this Saturday morning. Going to get to a break. When I come back, I'll wrap things up. I'll tell you what's ahead on the network and have a word from our friends at Bloodhorse. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go. Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go. Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Caraconti standing at Gainsway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
The September issue of Blood Horse Magazine features 154 pages, including No Easy Ride. As top jockeys reach their peak, Naira Colony features impressive depth. Yeah, they have great depth up there in New York. National Parks, Integrity, and safety are more important than ever as the Philly area track garners greater attention. And a sleeping giant stirs. This should be very interesting. A sleeping giant could be China. Big change could be coming to racing in China. How big is big? Well, Bob Kiekeffer has that feature, and you can check it out in the new Blood Horse Magazine. Download a copy of the September issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe today and receive a free gift at bloodhorse.com/subscribers only. My thanks to everyone who took time to weigh in on the poll question today and continue to do so even after we go off the air today. Those results will be final shortly. But the poll question, pretty simple. Who wins today's Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga? Happy Saver, Max Player, Forza, D'Oro, or other? And if you do click that, please let me know which of the other three horses that were entered you feel is going to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup later today. Don't forget, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, and that's where you can weigh in on the poll question, as well as on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, and Instagram, and of course on our YouTube page as well. Working on building that up for you. Going to be fun. Don't forget, next week, the debut of I Ask, They Answer, with trainer Dale Romans and acclaimed turf writer Tim Wilkin. That comes up at 10:30 Eastern. Brand new segment on the show next week. My thanks to Barry Pearl, to Chauncey Morris, to Acacia Courtney, Katie Tolbert, our unsung hero, trainer Todd Pletcher, the Hall of Famer, was here. Robbie Davis went in the room with Sean Clancy and to Kurt Becker, and of course Larry Comas just moments ago. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Not just this show, but all of our shows. They're there for you, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Now from my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for Chance Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week. Go Steelers.